Okay, we just about settled. Good morning, everyone, and welcome our guests. I am Barry Sample and chairman of today's meeting of the Agriculture and New York State Horse Breeders Development Fund. We're a meeting in the Schenectady headquarters of the New York State Gaming Commission. Present are board members Michael Kimmelman, Peter Argena, the Commissioner of New York State Agriculture and Markets, Richard Ball, who is a recent appointee as Commissioner of the agency. Also, the fund's Executive Director, Mike Mullaney, is here with us today. And we have counsels from the Gaming Commission and from the fund here to give us some guidance and direct us through if we need assistance as the process goes on. With the members that we have today, we have a quorum that would be sufficient to move along the agenda. And there are a few action items we need to address, and then hopefully we'll have some time for discussion toward the end of the session. The first item that I would like to address is the minutes from the last board meeting, which the composition and structure of the board at that time was different than the ones that we have now. The minutes of the Ag and Fund Board and Trustee meetings, which was held on December 13th, 2012, can be found in the, for the board members, can be found in tab 2 of your meeting binder. As a matter of due diligence, John Sabini, who presided as chairman of that meeting at the December 13th meeting, was contacted this week. The minutes of that meeting were emailed to Chairman Sabini to review and found no inaccuracies in the reporting of said minutes. Do we have any comments from any of the members of the minutes of the meeting? Okay. May I have a motion to accept rather than approve the December 13th meeting, since the composition of the board was different at that time? Do I have a motion? Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Thank you. Item 2 is a discussion and approval of the proposed contract with Harness Horse Breeders of New York State. There is a memorandum of information that precedes the contract found under tab 2 of your binders. Is there any discussion? Do folks need a moment or two to look through things? Provide some guidance. Do you want to provide just a brief verbal summary of what we're doing here?
Sure. In regard to the contract, the HHB, we recognize as a sole source provider from this year and years from years past. And for 2014, as part of a general belt tightening process, we've asked them to take a reduction in the fee for the services. And the reduction is $10,500. And as part of that, the fund will take on website administration. The HHB has also granted us our request that the knowledge base at the HHB be widened. A manual be a training manual, in effect, be made available for all staff at HHB. And we've also we adjusted the wording with the audit, which they graciously accepted, and the wording now reads that within 15 days of a request, all records pertaining to fund-related activities will be made available from the past 2 years. And those are the changes. Otherwise, it's in large part what it has been in years past.
Okay, and you've had no, or we've had no issues or concern with their performance up to this point?
No, sir.
Okay. Do I have a motion to approve, or do we need a little more time to look through things? Questions?
One thing here. The audit, when we go to audit, that'll be upon approval of the trustees that'll ask for the audit?
Yes.
Okay. The portion of their web support that we're taking over, is that a particular thing that we're going to take over, or?
It's just hanging stories, really. Basic management of the stories. Maybe if there's editing required, we'll handle that. And I'd like to retain a partnership with the HHB, but we'd like to get more involved in learning how to work the website.
Well, certainly, I think the partnership's worked well. My only real concern with what we would take over in years past, before you even came here, during the racing season, one of the biggest concerns from people that participate is knowing where they stand. And I know myself and a lot of people, anybody that's a good point to see from the state of New York in this business, they would ask, how do I know where I stand in the program? And at this time, I think they carry that portion where they show the point standings. If nothing else, that goes very smoothly, and I don't get the frantic phone calls. And, of course, the closer you get to the payoff at the end, people wonder where they if they have to go race somewhere to be involved and being eligible for finals and stuff. I think they still handle that, and I do know I don't get the crazy phone calls anymore. So that'd be one thing I'd like to see, if we can keep that kind of the way it is. It's important for people to know where to look for something, I guess.
Absolutely. I'd like to keep that with them as well. They've handled it well. I think Peter was telling me that it was a part of their server. I think it's on the HHB server. So I don't see any desire or interest in our part to tinker with that at all.
When you say you don't get the crazy phone calls, since it's been an example of one, I'm ignorant, would be what? Or the type?
Just two portions of our program lead up to finals at the end. So even though they participate and get paid in dollars mm-hmm. and cents as they race in those races, because of legs and horses dropping in, at the end of the year, they accrue points as they go through our Sire Stakes program and through our second tier, what they call the Excelsior program, and even in the Fair program. And there's a record kept. Everybody keeps pretty good track of the money they get. That goes in the bank, and they spend it before they get 2 seconds. But the points and where they stand, because you'll take, in most cases, unless it's held on the bigger track, the finals, the highest 8 point earners go to the finals. So there's a tally kept after every leg so people know where they stand. Mm-hmm. If somebody was so far ahead, they might skip traveling all the way across the state if their horse wasn't at their best and take a week to freshen up. If they were right on that bubble and they really knew they were 7, 8, 9, they might participate more to accrue some points so that they have a chance to race in the finals.
So where I am at certain points in time is going to determine my strategy in the short and long term.
Right, and at the very end, whether you're in or out.
Yeah.
So it's going to remain the same.
I think that's what you said.
Yes, right?
The prime changes in the website, essentially.
The website down the road, we might like to redesign. We have to address, that's in our agenda a little bit later, but we have to deal with the hosting for the website and the hosting for the email at some point. The incumbent provider would like to ease away from the state work.
Okay.
And we're shopping around with a few providers.
Okay. So do we have a motion?
I make a motion to approve the Iron Source Breeders contract.
Second?
Sure.
Vote? All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Item 3 is the discussion and approval of proposed New York NYSS purses, proposed NYSS and Excelsior schedule, and county fair race conditions. I think it would be an extreme oversight, and we'd be remiss if we did not recognize the work that Mr. Argenta has put into this whole process in terms of putting together the purses and schedules for 2014, and I think we all need to thank you, Peter, for your assistance in that endeavor. For organizational purposes and to make things clear, and since I'm new to the game, we're going to do things separate. We'll deal with the purses issue. We'll deal with the schedule issue and the conditions issue separately, so at least it's coherent for small guys like me. Everybody else is, you know, they'll catch up later on. You know, I'm crawling now. But in your binder, information related to this can be found under tab 3. Peter, would you walk us through as part of our discussion, and that will probably lead to question items or inquiries that people might have. We'd really appreciate it.
Okay, we'll start with the purses first. For the 2014 race schedule and purses, we've, after working with Mike and Charlie on this, they came up with a number for me around $15 million. And what I usually do is the Excelsior purses are each $12,000 each. And in the past couple of years since we started the Excelsior, the first year I estimated about 300 Excelsior races at $12,000, which comes out to be about $3.6 million that we put in the budget. Well, through the years, the last 2 years we've done the Excelsior, last year we had 235 Excelsior races, and we're trying to shorten up, we've overspent the past couple of years on that purses, so, and as we lose money, we're trying to shorten our budget. So for this year...
You say it's been overspending, the margin of overspending looks like...
Well, what? We've had reserve funds which we don't have anymore, so
yeah.
You know, when we've had, you know, $17 million total purses and everything, now we're down to $15 million. So, in my estimate, because we only did 235 races last year, this year I'm cutting it back from 300 estimate to 275. Mm-hmm. Just want to leave ourselves a leeway because, you know, every year it's different. You know, this past year I think everybody had a problem getting a horse to the races, so that could be some reason why we're low, you know, shorter on the number of races. And this year could be the other way around. So to leave us a little leeway, I'm using $3.3 million, which is 275 Excelsior races for the Excelsior purses. And then we also have $200,000 that we give to the Empire Breeders Classic every year. And we have $608,000 that goes to the county fair purses. And we have... the Night of Champions is $1.8 million, which is the finals for the top eight divisions. And then the Excelsior finals, they have eight divisions of those, which race for $45,000, so that's another $360,000 for those finals. That's pretty much all guaranteed money. That's, so after we pull that out of, we use that number, and then we go to the New York Sire State purses. And what we started with this year was a little something different, is we went to Buffalo, Batavia, Tioga, Vernon, and Monticello, those six tracks. We issued $800,000 per track to give to the... to the eight legs of the Sire Stakes. It's basically $100,000 per division. The only difference is there's a 5% difference, 10% difference, in which 2-year-olds will race for 10% less than the 3-year-olds. But between the two of them, they'll all race for the $100,000. So I think we come to Saratoga and Yonkers, who contribute the most money to the program. Mm-hmm. We had a few dollars still left, so Saratoga, we gave them $1.2 million for their purses, for their eight legs of the Sire Stakes. And I gave $2.2 million to Yonkers, and Yonkers has two legs in the Sire Stakes, where every other track has one leg. So they got $2.2 million, which would be $1.1 million for the Sire Stakes. That was my first original budget. After our meeting in October, I was contacted to add another $400,000 to Yonkers purses. I think there's letters in the attached from Yonkers Raceway and Ken Rooney and Joe Feraldo. because they had such a decrease from the year before. And this past January, I got another email from Brian that they wanted to add a little more money to the purses to Yonkers, so they are currently at $2.96 million going for the two legs. And that's what I've been advised from the office here in Schenectady. So that totals up all our money, which is, and then the $700,000 are going to be set aside for Breeders' Awards this year. So when you total all those up, it comes to about a package of about $15,200,000, something around there. As far as, you know, it's been a tough thing. We've been, you know, from the last couple of years, we had a previous, our executive director and keeping track of the money and everything. So we've had, you know, there's a couple of years here where we were trying to look for and get our accounting and back in shape here. And Brian's been working on that, and we think we've got a handle on that. And the only thing I have as far as, I mean, as far as purses for the track, that's where we go at, is the purses, is the amount of money. What we've always done in the past is our money, we always try to go from July, for this year, we go from July 1st of 2013, and it goes to June 30th of 2014. That's been our cutoff date for receipts to put towards the purses. I think last year, we went a little bit beyond that month date, so we've come up with in our money that we have to look at to see if you know how much money in purses and how much money we have, which I think we're going to be discussing later on in here. I think under personal budget is if we make the cutoff for June 30th, and that's something that we'll talk about in under budget. And if we are over the budget, then we might have to come back and relook at some of these purses.
Okay.
But that's basically how we arrived to the 2014 budget.
And normally, is there generally a point in time when you know that you're going to be comfortable with your projection, or let's say you hit September, or whatever, is there a point in time in the season that you get a sense of how off or on track we are with the
that's
projection?
That's something I think Brian's been doing the most of the work out here, from my understanding, and you know, most of our money comes from the VLTs. $12 million of our $12.5 million. The rest comes, the other couple million come from OTBs and the handle from the tracks. It's paid monthly from the tracks. So each month he'll be calculating how much. Now he could tell you right now how much we've earned in July of last year until right up until February of this year.
Yeah.
And so he's pretty much got a handle that on the average they we bring in, let's say we average about $1.2 million a month is what.
Yeah,
pretty
it's about $7.5 million right now from July 1st to the end of the year 2013.
Right. Okay.
That's where we're in, and it was about $8 million for the first half of the year. So it's somewhat consistent.
And out of the VLT locations, most of your revenue comes from where?
Yonkers.
Yonkers?
From
Yonkers and Saratoga. And the VLT, Yonkers contributes about $6.9 million. Monticello is about $2.1 million.
Okay.
Buffalo was over a million, but because of the Indian Casino in Buffalo that opened up last fall, they took about a 28% hit. And we're probably going to be maybe $200,000 short from that this year. Tioga's around $700,000. Monticello's around $700,000, $750,000, so in that area. Let's see, Vernon, Batavia comes in around $550,000, and Vernon's usually about $25,000-$30,000 under that. They just break the $500,000 mark. So that's the VLT contribution.
Okay. So, and then the out years with the casinos coming in, we have to think about what impact this. You know, it's not today's question, but that's
the
long term
thing.
That we've
got to discuss for future. Yeah. I mean, right now, I live in Rochester area, and right now we're having the problem of an Indian casino wanting to move into Henrietta and Rochester, which is 15 minutes from Finger Lakes Racetrack and 15-20 minutes from Batavia Downs. And they come in there with table games and everything.
Yeah.
they could wipe Batavia Downs right out and shut them down. You know? So, I mean, and we have races there, and we have, you know, along with OTV, they probably generate, you know, $700,000 to our program. So those are concerns for future. This year, I think Brian can, we can talk about in budget how, you know, where we're at. The only thing I don't want to try to, I'm trying to get back on to, I'd like to try to get where we're only using receipts to June 30th this year for this year's budget. And I think the purses go in hand with the budget. We need to talk about the budget, and just in case, or in future, if we want to stop our receipts at the end of June of this year to get back on track, then we may have to cut some purses some more here to do that. I think that's something that we need to talk. You know, I know the budget's later on in the
process. Yeah, we'll talk about budget later on today, but that whole dynamic might be worthy of a separate discussion altogether at some point in time.
Exactly.
You know.
So, but that's where we are at this point, right here, and that brings us to around a little over $15 million.
Okay. So, any further discussion on the purses?
So, you're comfortable with how it worked out with all the different tracks? They all got cut at a little different amount.
Well, we're always going to hear flat from Yonkers. They actually, last year, it's because last year when we did this budget, I think Mike was only in here for about a month before that, and pretty much a lot of this got left on everybody's lap, and this one and that one, so we're trying to figure out where we were, and, you know, we figured, well, what came up back to us was that there was about, we need to be about $500,000 shorter than we were the previous year. So we shorted the, or we cut back on the New York Cider State purses by 6%, but it probably should have been, you know, shorted a lot more than that. But I think the previous year, they, because they had reserves they were using, we had like almost $7 million going to Yonkers, you know, the year before, and last year they had like $6 million something. So now that we're almost $3 million shorter and they bring the most money, they take the biggest hit. The other thing is a lot of these other racetracks contributing, they're getting $800,000 for their legs for the Sire Stakes, but they're only contributing $500,000 or $600,000. You have to have the money come from one computer to pay Paul. And the reason that we have to have $800,000 for each leg is each leg gets $100,000. When you start dividing it by three and four divisions, they're going to be racing for, you know, if you cut them too much, they're going to be racing for less money than the Excelsiors. They need to be at least a minimum of $25,000 at some of the smaller tracks as our divisions. And you can almost through the years we've kept track of the divisions, but you know, some years you have more colts than fillies and more pacers and trotters, and some divisions end up having, you know, you might race four divisions of one class, and they'll race for $25,000, let's say, or $30,000, and then the other division might only have two divisions of colt pacers, let's say. So when you split $100,000 between colt pacers, they're racing for $50,000. So you know, they're not all the same when it comes to the Sire Stakes. It all depends on how many divisions you have to split the $100,000 by, but we feel that $800,000 it should be the
minimum
that any track should get. So when you start giving away $800,000 and then you do all the Excelsiors, there's only so much money left that you can to give to split between Yonkers and Saratoga. We gave them what we had left over to help breeze through, but Yonkers had the problem of it's almost $2 million less than what they got last year. But see, down at Yonkers, I've got sheets here showing all last year's in 2013 what all the purses were with all the divisions, which was handed out in October. I have copies of that here showing you how much money. I mean, we had $140,000 races at Yonkers, and you'd come back to Buffalo or Tioga or Vernon, and the same groups that were racing for that much were racing for $25,000. So there's there was a big difference there. But, it's Yonkers, you know, they insist that they try to want to get 75% of the money that they put out that they want back, but it just can't happen that way anymore.
Ultimately, the purse situation Peter had no choice but to move some of the money around, we'd be dysfunctional. We don't have the advantage of having that surplus to make it all right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that, again, gets to budget and what we're going to have to look at on June 30th. The Laverne Law, which was the original decision maker in how we passed out this money, indicated the money earned at the specific track went back to be spent at that track. The gray
dollar
area,
for dollar?
Within the 75%. Yeah.
Within the 75%?
Pretty much, right. As it fit the formula, it went back to those tracks. The VLT law neither addresses to follow that or to not follow that. So, to this point, because there was enough money, we have fairly closely followed that design. It's not practical, it's not possible mm-hmm. to do that now. So, there's no question that in helping out the program, so aside from helping the individual tracks that can't, to make the program whole, you can't ask somebody to ship from far distances for too little money in the grade A stake or our sire stakes, which then would become, you know, if you're racing a sire stake race for $13,000 or $14,000 and your next level down is at $12,000, it really isn't worth, other than the points, to participate. Yonkers, you know, will no doubt be a little uncomfortable about this, and there's potential ways we can deal with that in the scheduling, because this has been something they're staunch, they're very much against this. Mm. The program doesn't work unless he does this. He had to do exactly what
Understood.
He did.
Yeah.
But I think that with some of the, you know, even though Vernon Downs, for example, has a low contribution and we do other things there, you know, the state fair races that were supposed to be there, there's no money for that anymore either. So that has to, you know, the program does have to evolve. There's no question that, you know, Yonkers, when they see the money being moved around, will have an opinion on that. I think our best goal would be if we can do things in such a way so they realize we can't do it a different way. But if we don't push them too far on some of the other things, if it became a legal matter and they wanted to press this mm-hmm. issue of where that money's supposed to go, whether we win or lose, if it took a long enough time in the legal process, it's been our experience when this has happened in the past that people choose not to breed in New York and not to purchase New York bred horses because the outside view is there's no money. And whether it be when we had to determine in the early stages of the VLT law, it was legal to put money into purses, and we held all that money and the tracks didn't send the money, it eventually came. But it stymies the growth. People don't breed.
Unless
people
they see the activity, yeah.
Right. So it's keeping everybody kind of unhappy but tolerating what's going on is kind of the line I think we'd prefer to walk, as opposed to actually. And he spread this as fairly as he can. You know, I would agree with that.
So after we make some determinations or decisions around this, how best do we approach Yonkers? How best to roll this out?
They will approach
us. We're
going
to get some fallout, but what should we be doing to try to minimize the level of fallout? Anything at all?
Well, here's what Mike and I have spent probably the last couple days, 4 hours on the phone. It's to be done in scheduling. And basically the big thing is which we have to vote on here for this year, mm-hmm. but in future years is where the Knight of Champions goes. The Excelsior Finals go. The last couple of years, we've had great success with having a meeting and bringing all the track people in and sitting everybody down in the same room and discussing all this stuff. Mike's been talking with Jeff Correll and Yonkers, and we have ways that we can, you know, kind of make a deal on where everything's going to go in the future. Giving Yonkers the Knight of Champions full time. Given Vernon Downs, all the Excelsior Finals, and then giving the other tracks some decent races and some more attractions during the season, so it all doesn't come down to the last week.
Okay. So the scheduling is important enough that it'll compensate
yes.
for some of these
hits
in the other.
We need to talk about this right. for the future for 15 and or even for 14, where all the finals will go. And rescheduling all this stuff.
And to go one step further, we do our accounting in a way that we have to report it back. The reality is, it we don't account for it this way, but when they say they want their money, which is really our money, but if Yonkers says, well, they have the Knight of Champions, that also, even though it's for everybody, if it's held there, he can go, you know, they can say to themselves, well, there's $1.8 million that they didn't take away. Right? The Excelsior races, which we might not in our formula say is part of the Sire Stakes money, that's another $750,000 or so.
$720,000.
So that money goes back there.
Yeah.
So by the time you get them figuring the stuff that we wouldn't really say is the same apples to apples, if they're willing to
swim at revenue.
Exactly.
It's the revenue is the revenue.
And the odd thing is, like Peter points out, if you have more races there, they get the more free races to bet. The betting public doesn't, shockingly enough, bet more money on what you would consider the best horses. So it's not that they're creating a better betting product by us being there. The people actually like to bet the drivers and the horses they're used to seeing, which still shocks me. But what it does do is it helps their purse account. And by bringing back, in years past, and we'll hold them to this, we've raced our Sire Stakes races there to get complaints from our owners that they don't put them on the racing card. And they run them as non-betting races. And initially they told us, take away those Excelsior class races. We don't want them gumming up our program and keeping our overnight horses from racing. Well, now, spinning ahead a year or two, and they're like, you know what, we'd like to get those races back because now we dipped so far into our purse account at a time we didn't. By not having your free races, we want to have those races back. So we're giving them a little of that, but we're going to take it away somewhere else, and we kind of have to.
That makes sense.
We got to move it around. Yeah. That's the New York Sire Stakes. Yeah. We got seven tracks across the state, and it's got to be moved around and worked out. And, you know, I've been doing the schedule for the last 3 or 4 years, going to Florida with everybody and working with the tracks. And the first year was very tough. Then when we found out that I'm trying to be as fair as I can with the tracks, and this year it's like, you know what you're doing.
Okay.
You're not going to screw us over. You know, do what you can do and give us the best you can give us. And it's made life a lot easier. But getting back to the purses is the VLT money, in my definition, is it belongs to the fund. And it's not really the tracks money.
Yeah.
And it's the way the law states. But as you can see in the memos in here, Joe Feraldo and Tim Rooney agree differently on that, how it should be broke up. But if we can't use the VLT money at our discretion, then we can't run the Excelsior program, because all the programs, the first guaranteed money I told you about, it comes out of what we call the 19% or the other category. And if you take 19% of a $15 million program, it's not enough to, 19% of that, it's not enough to run those programs. So we have to treat this in the future that the VLT money belongs to the fund and we get to move it where we need to be moved. And I think we've done a very fair job of what we've got to work with. When Yonkers gets two legs and they get I had $1.2 million, they've raised it up to about $1.5 million, $1.4 million per leg, where everybody else is $800,000 and they get two legs of them. I don't know how much more fair you can ask it. And we'll get into scheduling this next, and we'll discuss on how I schedule those races.
Yeah. This is somewhat different than the discussion we've had in the Breeders' Fund on the Thoroughbred side. It doesn't really, you don't get into the track-specific discussion at all.
Because
Aqueduct drives everything.
The Thoroughbreds, they don't have none of this.
You've got the Aqueduct dollar, and that drives everything.
They don't have horses.
You know, like
they don't do
horses.
They're not, and races.
Yeah. So. Okay, any further discussion on the purses?
Any questions?
Well, do we need to address the Fed Champions now, or is that later?
Well, that's in the schedule.
Yeah, the next, we're going to do purses, schedule, and then do we have a motion to approve the purses?
The only thing I have one item is if we get into budget later and we need to take a few dollars away from Yonkers and bring them back to the 2.2
million, then we come back and revisit.
Then we come back and readjust this.
Yeah, I think we'll all.
I think it's going to have to be looked at as we go on.
It's a little bit liquid. It's something that needs to kind of.
Yeah, I was even wondering, should we have done budget first before we did this? But it's. Hey, we're all sitting here. We're going to do it down anyway.
It's all going to resurface again. It all ties together.
Yeah, I was wondering, like in order, should we have done the budget? That gives us a context. Then we know how much we've got to play with. And then the. OK.
can, but we can go back to it. So.
Okay, as long as everybody's comfortable with that, that's
just
what we'll do.
It's the budget's a guess anyway.
Okay.
It's the budget.
Right.
Okay, so do I have a motion to approve with that as a...
Amendment
to that? Okay. Second?
Yeah.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay. And Peter, if you can lead us in the discussion of the schedule.
Okay.
We had to divide it for me. If we put it all together, I don't know what I'm doing. Still don't know what I'm doing. But if we break it up, it makes it simpler.
Our 2014 race schedule, we have a little bit, a few things that are a little bit different from the previous year. And that is, well, let's tell you how we get the schedule. Every year I go to Florida. They have a race secretary's meeting in Florida. And all the Grand Circuit and all the races from all over North America. So we work with everybody to try to avoid as many conflicts that we're not running a sire stake race of the same division against a multi-million-dollar race on the same day or week. We try to get it where New York Breeders can race in the sire stakes.
Mm-hmm.
And when there's like the Hamiltonian or the Yonkers Trot or wherever, that we don't have that class race in the same week, so we try to. It's very difficult to do, but we try to do the best we can to avoid it. But it's gotten easier to do this schedule. Before the first year I did it, I was on the phone to all the tracks, and they're requesting this, requesting that, and it took me almost 4 months to get the schedule done. And then we decided we were able to go to Florida to do it. And after I did it the second year, it got down to it was only a couple of months. Well, this year, because the tracks know what they want, I know what they want, it makes everything a lot easier. I've already got, like, for next year's schedule, I already know when each track wants certain things at certain days. So this year, I didn't even start the schedule until I got to Florida, and I got it done in 2 days. So it's getting really easier to do this. And the difference in this year's schedule is, in the past, we ran which we called New York Sire Stake races, and we had Excelsior / State Fair races. By law, we're supposed to race races for the New York State, that we call the New York State Fair. Years ago, they raced at Syracuse. We passed legislation to be able to move them to the, and then legislation says we can move them to the parimutuel tracks. Starting with 5/8 or larger tracks has preference over the half mile. They are basically just another extra Excelsior race. Basically, how we did it through the last few years was at each racetrack, we have our New York Starter Stakes, which is our A races, and then we have our Excelsior races, which is the next division down, next level down. They race at the same track on the same night. And you have to pick and choose. If you pay into both, you have to pick and choose which ones you go to. And but they're raced on the same day, same night. What we did was Yonkers didn't want those Excelsior races at their racetrack a couple of years ago. So we took which would have been their races and moved them to Vernon and Tioga, and we called them the Excelsior / State Fair. So we abided by the rules and regulations of what's in the... That's what's in the law. They have a so-called state fair race. And we've done that in the last few years. But this year, Yonkers requested that they want more sire stake races there. So we're going to give them their two legs of the Excelsiors there. And in the meantime, Vernon has given up their two-year-old, three-year-old so-called state fair races and sent them back to Vernon. So what we're going to do this year to abide by the rule of the state fair, when we have sire stake legs, we'll appoint or designate, we have to have one for each leg, for eight legs. And we're just going to, all we have to do to abide by it is in the program, we're going to print in there that this New York Sire Stake / State Fair race. So it gets us through. And it helps give Yonkers another $750,000. And one of the biggest things they wanted was more races to have less overnight races, so that they can help build up their purse account again. So they're going to be getting roughly around 60 more races, I anticipate, at Yonkers Raceway this year that they didn't have last year. So, I mean, that's 60 less races that they put out on the average of 20, 25,000 race. I mean, it can save them a lot of money and their purse account. So they're happy about that.
Now, the impact of increasing it there, where does that come from?
It's all Excelsiors. It's part of that 275 yeah. races that I put together, all that $3.3 million that I
should phrase it a different way. What tracks is that going to impact?
Move them back to Yonkers?
Yes.
Oh, it'll impact Yonkers.
No, you're increasing.
Where does it come from?
Where does it come from?
If you were to say we loaned it initially from Yonkers
to
way to
the two tracks that you mentioned.
Now it's going back to Yonkers.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. And their reaction to this is going to be?
That's what they wanted. We're giving them. Yeah, they want the Excelsior races back.
No, but
other tracks.
Yeah, but Vernon, what's their reaction going to be in Lee?
They left it go. They just said, that's fine.
Okay, very good. No, I was just wondering
what they contribute least. And so they're one of the tracks that's going to get that cake iced a little bit with money that they're not contributing in.
Very good. So they've got
so
a shortfall.
They're kept more flush than they contribute. So they're happy with the way it goes. And there's even something else in the scheduling we might get to later. You're going to get a little something else on top of that, too.
And also, too, is we also had races at Goshen. And Goshen was always tied in with Yonkers. So you either had, you know, it was actually Yonkers' leg that went to Goshen. And so by giving them back, we're still keeping Goshen. So basically for the three-year-olds. So basically, all the three-year-olds will get in the Excelsior. There'll be one extra leg this year for the same amount of money. So, and we've cut back on that. So we're actually, the horsemen are getting one extra leg in the Excelsior. And just to explain Excelsior, there'll be no points for the Excelsior race at Goshen, because if you pay into both, you can have both the New York Sire Stakes horses and the Excelsior horses can go together, Goshen, and race in the same races together. And that's the way we had it the first year at Goshen, that, you know, we didn't have it where they didn't have, you know, he had to pick or choose. And that's what Jeff Gorell wanted. He wanted the bigger horses coming. But, you know, he had the best horse coming with the middle of the class horses coming, and the luck of the draw, they get together. It didn't work out so good. And then everybody's complaining about the points that, geez, I'm an Excelsior horse, but I got beat by the good horse. He's not going to need the points anywhere, but I need those points. So basically, this is a race at Goshen, which is the Hall of Fame, Grand Circuit Week. Whoever wants to go there can go there. The best horses can come there. They all just compete, and they don't have to worry about racing for points, so nobody's losing out. So that's why we're not racing for points at Goshen. And it's an extra leg that they didn't have last year because of the two extra legs at Yonkers. So what we have in the scheduling is same day, same night. And the only thing we haven't done, I have the Night of Champions is scheduled for September 13th. I have the Excelsior Finals. And in the past, we've been moving this around. And the last 2 years, we've been at Yonkers Raceway. And what we need to discuss here is if we're going to move it around, if it's going to go to Yonkers or it's going to go someplace else. And as far as the Excelsior races go, I've been working with the remaining three tracks that are open. And what we do is, because Saratoga contributes $2 million, they always get either two-year-olds or three-year-olds every year. And then Monticello and Batavia alternate every other year. And then there's the County Fair Finals. So last year, Batavia had the County Fair Finals, and Monticello had the Excelsior two-year-old divisions. So this year, Monticello is going to get the County Fair Finals, and then normally we move the County, the Excelsior Finals back to Batavia. So four divisions go to the Excelsior Finals at Batavia, and the other four will go to Saratoga. That's how it's been done in the past. This is the first year I have in the schedule. When I did it, that was my game plan, but as we got talking about where to do it, we left out where it's going to go and discuss it here, and we'll choose today where we need to go with these races. So that's, I think, as far as the schedule goes, that's the only thing we've got left that we have to do with the schedule, is to choose where the Night of Champions will be held and the Excelsior Finals will be held.
Anyone have recommendations, suggestions, discussion?
Well, why don't you let Mike has a scenario.
We've talked about this quite a bit, Pete and I, And obviously, the juggling act that we have here at different times, we want to do what's right for the program first.
Mm-hmm.
We want to keep everybody as happy as we can. We have some ideas what we can do next year that might work on an even grander scale once we're all here and kind of get to know each other and what we can do. But to pacify or help some of the different tracks, a couple of the thoughts would be, down the road, having events that people know they can count on in certain places. So Vernon not having the actual state fair that they at one time thought was, you know, theirs. Yonkers, who really seems to hold on to this idea that not just the money, but the final should always be at their place. So we're taking the money, because we have to. I think if we were to leave the finals there, that kind of helps us not also go in and scoop out what they would consider another $1.8 million.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that certainly kissed your shorts in the knot. So
yeah, okay.
I think that if we were to leave that there, and then reciprocally, if we could create something at Vernon for two reasons, one better than the other, we've always said that we had the state fair races to get faster records on horses, and the contention of moving the races around a little bit. For the bigger tracks, the horses tend to go faster. The best horses that race in the Knight of Champions get many places to race, not just in the Sire Stakes, but outside the program, and they get plenty of fast race records. If we were to hold the consolation, or the finals for the Excelsior, the next level down, at Vernon every year, that's a twofold effect. One, we can get actually one more horse in the gate, right? Which is nice.
Fields, mm-hmm.
It's a nice big track. More horses at the slightly lower level have a chance to get good records. But even the best thing I can think about is people knowing that that's going to be there every year. We have a very good in-state horse sale run by Dave Hansen, who's the president of the Harness Horse Breeders. And it's a great service for many horses. But a real staple of it is it's the New York product that's represented there. And by having an event the night before at Vernon, it has the people there. Getting there doesn't seem to be as easy as getting other places. So if they're at Vernon, they stay at the hotel the night before, we have that audience to purchase those horses there for the next day. And being creatures of habit, I think if we can get that there every year, it really helps support the horse sale. And I think it would also make Mr. Corral happy. Like the rest of us, he would like to have that and more, and Yonkers would like that more and more and more. But I think that it would take care of those types of things we need to do. It leaves us in a position with what do we do for some of the other tracks. We have ideas for the future. Some of the stuff that we thought about in the short term, and different tracks also put their best foot forward a little different than other tracks. There's no question that, is it fair to mention the one track by name?
No, go ahead.
Nobody here but us.
Monticello certainly had, you know, the closest parimutuel track to my home.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people, there was a lot of my friends there. I grew up raising horses at that place. They do the poorest job in the state maintaining the racetrack. And it's not because it's a bad track. It's effort. And they do the least to make it palatable for our customers when they go there. It's more of a casino-driven facility than any of the others. So the facility for our people to use, it's not really a great experience for our people to go to the races there. So to give them something spectacular doesn't put our best foot forward. And we're putting our stamp on this, too, with the Sire Stake races. So I really don't see a reason to reward them extra. Saratoga, we have some ideas for the future. But as a stopgap for this year, you would talk about the possibility of doing something else.
Well, I thought about this after talking to him. We thought about, well, if for this year, and I'd like to get all the tracks involved in this, but we don't have time, but is what Mike is talking, like I'm looking at this for 2015. If Yonkers ended up getting the United Champions every year, and Vernon, we gave them.
And from
them,
a revenue standpoint, that gives them the 1.8
right,
along with the 700,000
plus
there.
Plus 700,000 plus
so that gets them.
Million,
yeah,
so
and then
two,
they're getting
three,
there, so
they should make four.
Them yeah.
They're around 5 million. It'd make them very happy.
Okay.
Okay.
Vernon, they contribute to Lee's, but by giving them the Excelsior races finals, all eight of them, it helps us promote the Morrisville sale, which could use some promotion.
Understood.
It's
my
great,
question is, how long do we want
to... 2009.
You were saying, if I was hearing correctly, and I might not have been, that you wanted to make a permanent commitment there, Vernon.
For the Night of Champions at Yonkers and Vernon, if we did this. And then, and this would be for 15 and later, is to take the other tracks, which I just happened to get a phone call from Batavia Downs yesterday, and I told them we could do some signature races during the summer instead of waiting to the very end and trying to give them a couple finals. We could move some money around and bring in some maybe some aged New York Sire horses. And they have a night up there, which is called the Bob Kane Memorial Night. And that would be to give them something to have a bunch of horses coming in, sire stake horses, maybe use age horses, and giving them a night to do something. And they thought that was a great idea. They're all for that. So that would appease them, you know. I think the only thing we got to work on, and we always do Saratoga, the only thing they've always asked for every year is they have the Joe Garrity night, and they always ask for the three-year-old pacing colts to come there on that Saturday night in August, and we give that to them every year. But we could do something where we could do a weekend for them or anything that they suggest. Mike's got a lot of suggestions. I'm going to leave that up to him. But for 2014, I had some ideas. If we did that in 14 where we went to Yonkers again and give Vernon this, we've got to do something because we can't now do those signature races because the schedules are already done. I thought about doing a consolation race for the Excelsior because we used to have a consolation race for the Fall Harvest, which we called the Fall Harvest at Yonkers, was the first 8-point winners went to the eligibles, went to the Night of Champions, and the next 8 went to the Fall Harvest, which that's what you call the consolation. And we've done that since, I think, 2009. And this past year, because the number of divisions with the Excelsior, to get the next group of 8 horses for the Fall Harvest, we almost had to go down to one horse race one time and earn 5 points. We had to go down to the bottom of the list to find a horse. And some of them were short fields of 5 to 6 fields. So we're not really getting enough horses to fulfill the Fall Harvest. And that's one thing that we've discontinued this year is the Fall Harvest.
Why? We don't have enough horses with the numbers, or there wasn't enough
interest? You start out with plenty enough horses, but as horses get sore, they get lame, don't make it.
Okay.
And the numbers dwindle.
We ended up rewarding horses that participated at almost zero level in the program. That primarily raced for Canada or somewhere else, and we had some short fields. But we had horses coming in there that really, you know, maybe got money that could have been directed to people that were really here, you know, supporting our program all summer. And I think the reason it got upside down this year is, with the change from the old format to the Excelsior program racing on the same day, the horses that were the second-tier horses had made a commitment right off the bat to go to the Excelsior. Right. And so we didn't have that strong list of 16 to 20-something horses to fit there. They already made the decisions. They were already racing. As strange as it sounds, our second-level next 8 is a better representative of horses participating in the program than our second level top tier. So and I don't know if it's something that we'd want to do for forever, but if we were to do something like this, it's something to do for now. If we had more money, it would be nice to do.
But anyhow, getting back to this is the maybe for this year to have a consolation for the Excelsior, because we have 235 Excelsior races to choose from where we only had 185 Sire Stakes. So we could fill a consolation for the Excelsior horses and split them up to Saratoga and Buffalo, or Batavia. But that was what we kind of talked about. But then if we go to this thing in 15 and we do this, then we won't have the consolation for next year. If we don't want to, then, you know, having it 1 year, not having it, it's not such a great idea. We've had the thing about moving it around. I've always been for moving the Sire Stakes around the finals. This year, like I said, it should be Vernon's turn to come back to Vernon this year. I know we're going to hear a lot if we go to the Vernon Downs with the Knight of Champions. The other two Excelsior races split between, finals split between Buffalo or Batavia and Saratoga. I'm sure we're going to hear an earful from Yonkers, but, you know, I would like, the easiest way for me would be to move it to the Vernon this year, split the finals of the Excelsior up, try to talk to Yonkers and say, if we do this year, and then if we look at what Mike's doing for 2015, mm-hmm. and we say, okay, start in 2015, you're going to get the New York Cider Stakes from here to whatever, you know, every year, that's maybe a trade-off where they won't get so upset this year, knowing that they're going to get the Cider Stake finals over the next 20, 25 years or whatever. You know, that's what we decided to do. That would be a lot easier way to do it than adding a consolation or something than this year. I know in the past, the previous funds, they wanted to move this around. The only way we can move this around really is we have to take the notion that the VLT money belongs to the fund and we get to put the money where we see fit. So, I mean, that's the whole game we've been playing for 5 years. And
or take this middle ground approach and trying to satisfy everybody to a certain extent. Nobody's going to be satisfied all the year.
But anyhow, I mean, there's different ways that, you know, my scenario, Mike might feel a little different. He can explain a little more. But I feel that if this fund wants to look at, in 2015, given Yonkers, every year going with the Knight of Champions in Yonkers and the Excelsior Finals to Vernon every year, if we start that in 2015, then in 2014, well, if we do one last time, we move it to Vernon and the Knight of Champions and do what we're originally going to, you know, the way I originally scheduled it. And hopefully, you can appease Yonkers and say, look, in the future, this is what we're going to do. Yeah. And that's one way to look at it. The only thing on Mike's version, what I want is if it does go to the Knight of Champions in, for the next 20, 25 years or whatever we decide to do, is I want something from Joe Feraldo and Yonkers Raceway to say that the money belongs to the fund. It's us to determine where it goes, and it doesn't belong to the tracks. And so we can put that aside and don't have to worry about getting these 8- and 10-page letters every year saying that it belongs to them. And I think if you put everybody in a room and do this, I think we can make everybody happy.
Yeah, and we can deal with the Vernon issue, the Yonkers issue, all at the same time. Yep. Rather than, so we do.
I mean, it's all got to work together. But I just think if we do this in 15, and we sit there and talk to Yonkers, this is what we want to do. We might be able to keep them happy in 2014, and everybody's agreeable to what Mike's suggesting for the future of holding these things. The nice thing about doing that is the nice thing about at Vernon Downs is the Morrisville sale. It's a big plus for that sale to do that. So that's my feeling on the scheduling of the Knight Champion.
If I'm understanding what we're articulating here, is that for this year, we have the schedule that you're suggesting.
Right.
But like in terms of the, are we saying that we're going to make a determination today on long-term regarding Yonkers or Vernon, or we're just doing the 14 schedule and that would be a...
Well, I would be inclined, only because of opening the door and moving the money is a big conversation. And I think that if we keep those guys at the table, we can do this. Those guys being Yonkers. And Yonkers, they're not always very easy. Certainly Mr. Corral is not always very easy. I think that if we, in their mind, they feel it's been represented to them, and I don't know why, that for this year is what they were told, it would stay there. And I don't know where that comes from, but I do know if it isn't, the hair on their back is going to immediately go up. And I think that if we can't work in the scheduling for Saratoga, we can use the same money we would fund for that and possibly spend some money to help on Garrity Night, to help. We can do something for Saratoga, but I think that if we put in place the Excelsior Finals at Vernon, Mr. Garral said he would be happy, which is, you know, he said he would also like everything else, but he didn't make a face.
Yeah. But when you say put in place, I don't know what that means. We're talking about a permanent placement, or we're just talking about for, at the moment, for
well,
this season,
we can make a decision,
and we're going to have
for
a discussion
right now,
for...
And then as next year wears on, we can make a decision for...
Correct.
Forever.
Okay, that's fine. Then we bring... That's what I thought I was hearing.
We can do either way, but... And then we can hold them hostage and want to talk to them about them being a little more flexible on the money thing. But if we move that Night of Champions and move the money this year, they're going to be very hard to talk to. And I think their following action will be very detrimental to the program. I don't know whether... It doesn't matter to me whether they would win or lose. We would lose.
Yeah. Okay.
But my thing is, if we decide that we want to give Yonkers the Night of Champions and we start that in 2015 and they have it for, you know, that Thursday, that keep, I just can't see that if we decided to go to Vernon this year and one last time, I can't see why they would want to, you know, they're giving up one Night of Champions this year to have it for the next 25 years or for as long as we're in business. I just think that if we go to Vernon, what Mike wants to do in 2014, then Saratoga is saying, wait, we're giving eight races to Vernon Downs that contribute $500,000, and we're getting nothing at spending $2 million. I think they're the only ones that are going to, you know, say, what are we getting this year?
Because it's not necessary. We could do it better in the future. But
right.
For Saratoga, even without changing the schedule, on the Garrity week, you know, the Gem of Saratoga exists in the summertime. It's the only place in all of racing you can walk around and not feel like you're wearing a black hat. Because when you're in Saratoga during the thoroughbred meet, you're actually, and you tell somebody you're in the horse business, they look at you like it's a good thing. And the idea is to capitalize on that down the road. And as much as the thoroughbred industry wanted to get close to us while they were working on their things in recent years, here's a good chance for us to get close to them and capitalize on them. So I think that without doing any scheduling, we can move even the money that we would set aside to try to do something of the consolations, and we can enhance the experience when our horses race there, like on Garrity Night, where we're racing the three-year-old Pacers, and take some of that money back from the Yonkers that Barry was seeding in there, that extra $700,000, and cut that, because it's not just the money with them. I talked to them. Bob Galterio, who runs the track, has also told me, you know, they run $200,000 is normally what their purse account is around that time of year for a Saturday night. They said they would take some of the money they save and dump it into enhancing their gambling product and make some guaranteed pick four, guaranteed pick six, try to promote the thing better. But, you know, we should get more bang for our buck from any of the tracks that we do business with. I talked to him about the possibility of doing something with a local hotel, one of the better ones, and giving our customers a chance to bus in and bus them back to the hotel after the races and the cocktail parties. And everything else. He told his marketing people could work. They feel very strongly about it. And so I know as strongly as they feel about it, I am sure there will be more than, you know, I wish there were more reasonable. I would bet that they're gonna between moving the money around, which they see is the possibility leading to even greater money being moved around. And they are very sensitive on both of those subjects. If we're going to do one, I think the response would be really bad if we did both.
Okay, so we address Yonkers, we address Vernon, but we don't have, we still have a Saratoga issue.
Or
we create a Saratoga
issue. For this year, if we decide to go to Yonkers and get Vernon all that, Batavia's not going to sit and cry. They told me, look, you're helping us as it is, as long as you look and help us in the future, in which, you know, that's what we're going to do in 15. I think Saratoga would be the... They only ask for one thing. They're not really, what I want to say. They're not always on my throat and wanting this or wanting that. So, I mean, it can happen this year. We could do that, you know. But the only thing...
You have to break that down. That is, what... Give them...
So basically, If we move the Knight of Champions, if we leave the Knight of Champions at Yonkers,
okay.
Bring the Excelsior races, the eight Excelsior races to Vernon, they yep. have their so-called Knight of Champions for the Excelsiors. And then the county fairs I've got set for Monticello. And then Saratoga and Vernon, maybe we can do something, help them someplace this summer. Not moving horses around, but maybe moving money. But if this is going to happen, I don't want to give Yonkers the $2.9 million for the purses. They can go back to $2.2 million, which leaves us $700,000, which we might need anyhow when we talk about budget. But it leaves us a few hundred thousand dollars in there that maybe we can do something for Saratoga and Buffalo yeah. during the summer. You know,
it might make sense at the moment, sitting here now, to get at least have that flexibility.
And then the draw off, if we go to Yonkers every year and we make that deal, like I said, I don't want to ever have the argument from Yonkers Raceway again to say that's their money. In order to do this,
if they've got that mindset, you always going to hear it.
Yeah.
It's that general. You always going
to
hear
it. BLT money has to come to the fund, and we have to do what's right for the program and where it's got to go. Because that's the only way we can do this.
Like you said, they're always going to whine, but you've got to shut it down with some sugar and let them take their medicine. Yeah.
So does it make sense from a scheduling and budgeting standpoint to give us that flexibility with that $700,000, at least for today, for the moment?
Exactly.
And you program Vernon the way that we're talking about doing. Program Yonkers. Let me back up there. When we talk about programming Vernon the way that we're talking about doing it, are we telling Vernon now that it's going to be long-term, or are we telling them that this is what we're doing for this year, and there's a possibility it'll be long-term, but we're looking at the overall picture?
We could do that.
That's my preference.
Use
because
this is a pilot program. Yeah.
Certainly hint to them that that's our desire, but we're not guaranteed.
Yeah, because when I say I make a decision so we have it forever, you know, then you know that's how I got married. You know, I didn't know. Look what happened now.
Sounds like more talks that go on before you're ready to make anything permanent. You know, cause you
but got but like I said, if we do that, and then you know, like I said, if we go ahead and do this, Yonkers, I mean,
you're going to give them the 2-9. They're going to have some fallout. Look, we haven't programmed everything yet. Yeah, we're
looking. An 8-page letter from Joe Farrell to cry. He's got to accept that.
Yeah.
The money belongs to the fund to do what we want.
And then there's a potential up, and if we've got to meet with them to do that, that's good, but I don't want to.
That's the way it should work. I mean, in the future, if we can do that. I mean, if we do this, I think we can keep Yonkers happy, Vernon happy, and do things for the other tracks during the year. They're very happy.
And something that you suggested a few times, both of you, that's important, we need a meeting with the track folks.
Oh, yeah. We've done that the last two years.
Figure out how we do that. Yeah, and then we talk about what their issues are, and we see what we can put together to address it. And I think we have to be candid with everybody about what the future looks like.
Right.
We don't know. We don't know what the impact of everything that's coming in, you know?
A few years ago, before we started the Excelsior program, the New York bred sold and sale, we were at the bottom of the list behind New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And since we started this Excelsior and be able to move some money around and make everything look good, and it is good, we got the best New York, the New York Sire Stakes, the best Sire Stakes program around. And everybody will tell you that. And because we have more opportunities and try to move the money around and try to, you know, I know Yonkers is going to have more and the other one's a little less, but it's not that bad. It's and they like that. And we moved, this year, Harrisburg, New York Reds were number one on the list. We were 12% higher average per horse than Pennsylvania was second. So, I mean, we've come a long ways. We just need to tweak this a little more. And if we can start making all the tracks happy and all the horses happy.
And the tone would be, we need to work together to see what we can do in a united manner to strengthen the industry and what do we see the future of the industry looking
like. We have to look at this. We've got a lot of problems coming if we get seven more casinos going.
Yeah, and within the context of that,
function? Being creative every year and how we spend our money and how we make it work. See, the one thing about the New York Sire Stakes, we've used the same amount of money or a little less, but our purses have gotten better because a few years ago before the Excelsior program, we forced horses to have to race in the Sire Stakes legs. And it made more divisions. And every time you have more divisions, you split that 100,000 up more ways. I mean, we had it a few years ago. We had 9 divisions split by 100,000. It didn't race for much, you know. But now that these horses that aren't as competitive, they couldn't go down to the, what we call the lay closers because they made too much earning cap. So now they get to pick and choose. There's no caps. And what we've done is we've made less divisions. And by making less divisions in the New York Starter Stake at the A level, we don't have to split that 100,000 so many ways. So that's why our purses have actually doubled or tripled. And everybody's happy with it, you know. So, I mean, it's a win-win situation. So.
Okay.
Any questions?
Any more discussion? Question?
And the only thing I'd add is, you know, if we kind of pull back that money we've got edged out for Yonkers, it gives us, you know, multiple possibilities we can do it. If we have a shortfall, it covers. Okay. If we actually buy some, and we have more, we've cut money out of the Breeders' Awards program, so it's 700. You could put three there along with doing other things, or you could carry it over to next year as in a prime either.
We haven't even looked at it.
Or we may end up going to Yonkers with it, but at least it gives us some flexibility to do some things. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. So that's kind of where we're at. Yeah. So.
Okay. Do we have a? I was going to say, do we have a motion? Do we know what the motion is at the moment?
Well, I think we have two scenarios.
Good, you could do that.
The one scenario is we go to Yonkers with the Knight of Champions, and the eight divisions of the Excelsior go to
Vernon
Downs.
Okay.
And then that ends all the final questions as far as the finals. Saratoga won't get anything. Batavia won't get anything, and Monticello will get the county fair finals. And we can probably do something sitting down with Batavia and Saratoga.
On how we program.
On how we can help them out doing something during the summer to make up for it.
Okay.
And then the other scenario would be is the other scenario was to move it around, and which would be Yonkers' turn or Vernon's turn this year. And then you split the Excelsiors like we've done in years past between Saratoga and Batavia, and which opens up a can of worms that Yonkers is just getting two legs and nothing else, and that's the other scenario. So at this point, you know, I think the best thing to do is what Mike's talking about and leave it at Yonkers and do the Vernon thing. And hopefully that might be the pattern for 15, and we get to use what money we want without no complaints at Yonkers Raceway.
Okay, so the motion is scenario number one, as I understand. Correct? Okay.
Yep.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Second. Oh, we did it. We did the vote. So you see, we get the discussion too long, I get lost. Okay. Thank you. Okay, and I think the final item in this section is a discussion regarding county fair race conditions.
County fair, New York Starter Stake, and Excelsior. There's three divisions, okay? And in the booklet, it starts out with the New York Starter Stakes, number 55. And I think anything that we've changed, every year, the New York Starter Stakes is the yearlings come in. Number 55 are going to be the nominations for this year's yearlings, and they get nominated in May of 15. And we have conditions for every year. the three-year-olds that are racing this year are stake number 53, and the two-year-olds are stake number 54. So every year. We have a number, and that's the way it has to be. So each year we look at, as we have, not problems, but it's different things arise. We kind of keep tweaking the conditions to make everything a lot easier for everybody. And the conditions this year are in red for stake number 55. And the first one we have here is the nominations. And any payment due dates that fall on a weekend or holiday, we've had this year. Where usually February 15th and April 15th are the due dates for the nominations for the Starter Stake payment. This year, and which we have done in years past, it's just been a routine formality. It's just like your IRS places. If it falls on a Saturday, we usually accept payments postmarked to the following Monday. Well, this year,
On Monday in February, we had a holiday, so we went to Tuesday. But there was nothing in the conditions that stated that we do this.
Okay.
It's just something we've done every year. So we want to add this in there so there's no question about it. And that way, whoever's looking at this, they got the condition, boom, it's there. It's real simple. So that's why we're adding in the red that any payment due dates the following weekend or holiday will automatically become due on the next regular business day. That's that one. One thing that is not in red that just came up this past week, and I want to add to these conditions, is underneath the supplementary entries, which is next couple paragraphs down, our supplements are due on the 15th of February. If they missed the previous payment as a two-year-old, you can supplement them by paying $500. We had a few problems this year where people would buy a yearling at the sale, and in the catalog it says it's New York eligible. So you assume the $50 is paid the previous, you know, previous year's a yearling. When it comes time for the February payment, you make your...
Prior to sale, whoever had it...
Yeah, whoever had it is supposed to be eligible. Okay. So you just assume it's eligible because it says it in the catalog. And you get, you know, you go make your February payments, and all of a sudden Betty receives them at Harness Horse Breeders. She looks down and says, well, the horse wasn't nominated at the $50, so you need to make the $500 payment. Well, most people use steak and services, or everybody pays it the last day. So if it's postmarked on the 15th, if you don't, you know, if you receive it 5 or 6 days later, that's fine as long as it was postmarked. So when you open it up, you find out the horse isn't eligible. Well, you call them up and say, well, you can make the $500 payment, but it's already past the due date of what this says. So I want to move the due date for the payment from the 15th of the month to the 1st of March. So that way it gives 2 weeks in there, or how many days that is, depending on leap year.
And this is only for the two-year-olds, right?
This is only for the two-year-olds.
Penalty for the non-making of the year.
Right, this is for the supplement, okay? So this
so
way...
So instead of, it would be, the payment would be due when? Instead of February 15th?
The nomination payments would still be due the 15th, but the supplement payment, which we have under supplement, the $500 payment,
March.
We allow them to March 1st. That gives time for...
Because we're coming to do the bookkeeping.
And everybody else to fix the problem and give them time to send the $500 in. Okay, so that way we eliminate, you know, a lot of this where I'm not eligible, I am eligible. I mean, especially like steak and services, which a lot of people use, is theirs come in on the due date. It's all electronically emailed, and they're assuming that, you know, that it says eligible, but it really wasn't. It was just, you know, you get... Mm-hmm.
What would be the possibility or the problems with eventually down the road?
These conversations and these dates are crazy.
Is it impossible to take these payments by credit card?
No. I mean, the stake...
That would solve a lot of the problems.
I mean, you can... Yeah, I think, Betty, you want to comment on... We talked about that at Harness Horse Breeders.
I discussed it with staff at one point, and we had a couple conversations about it. It's something that when the Sarsfix website is redeveloped, I think that it's very possible. The thoroughbred breeders do it now. And a lot of people who want to pay with credit cards, we have some bounce checks every year, so if they could use a credit card, it would be guaranteed, so you wouldn't have that issue with some people. And there wouldn't be a lot of checks to process if people were depositing and putting it on the credit card.
So now everything is paper-based.
Right now it's paper-based.
Okay. And we had talked earlier today about addressing issues related to the website and how we could help in doing that. So that's a feature that we need to think about sooner rather than later, at least give ourselves that option. Okay.
Okay. So that's the deal with the changing that date to March 1st. The next one you have in red is the registration. We just want to add in there that you must be registered with the United States Trotting Association, the USTA recognized standard for registry at time of nomination. And a copy of the USTA registration, the USTA recognized standard for registry organization's registration certificate dated on or before the time of nomination must accompany each nomination. Glenn, do you want to explain what happened with why we're adding this in?
And it's become an issue because a lot of people, I can say a lot of people, but a number of New York Reds are now raised in Europe and trained in Europe. And there's also horses that are raised, registered, and sold from Canada. And by putting in as only the USTA, you could possibly eliminate horses that are registered to in Sweden or Finland or Sandbrook in Canada. So by changing this, the horse's stud fees can be paid, which protects the breeders, and they can be registered anywhere.
Okay.
These are the horses, obviously, because it's a global industry. The horses produced in Europe with semen from stallions that stand in New York aren't eligible to start with. The most normal way this happens is if somebody sells a mare in full, say at Harrisburg in the fall, and she's carrying a New York eligible foal in her belly and goes to Sweden and falls out there and then ends up in their registry, it met all the criteria here to be a New York eligible foal by being inseminated in the state, and in many cases could even meet the Breeders' Awards, you know, if it was here for enough time. Yet that foal being born in another country and registered somewhere else wouldn't come up on the list, right?
Could potentially not be able to pay into the States until it came back to the United States and was rebranded.
I should just make a clarification is that the USTA does have reciprocity with every major standardbred organization internationally.
I see. Okay.
So it's not like we don't recognize their registry, we do. So, but, you know, it's just a matter of, because the USTA recognizes it,
We should also recognize that that's the process. That's why this is okay. And that's it for number 55 conditions, or do you want to vote out 55 as well? What do you suggest, that we go through all the, summarize all the conditions? Well, we could do them one by one. Yeah, okay. Very good. Do I have any more discussion?
I make a motion to pass.
Motion. Second.
Second.
Further. As adjusted, I should say.
And that'll include the March 1st.
Yes, the March 1st. I think we're all assuming that. Okay. Very good.
Okay. The Excelsior. Ready to bring another Excelsior? Because I see mine here. Not in red.
I didn't print them in red.
Oh, okay.
They were not included.
Okay.
They should be near
55.
All right.
Okay.
So I have a red on the third page.
Yeah, you got an A in there. But anyhow, the major change.
This is the one we're talking about, right?
Yeah. Yep. The Excelsior conditions for 2014. One of the things that we're doing this year is proposing is taking the Excelsior and dividing it up into two groups, A and B. And actually, A is what we raced in the last 2 years. If you drop in, you race for $12,000, it costs $100, and you race. What's happened is, because everybody's starting to kind of classify their horse, is that these Excelsiors are getting pretty tough. I mean, they're getting some decent horses in there. So what we ran into the problem this past year were, you know, we had some horses that could, you know, travel pretty good, and then you had the other horses that were, you know, a couple seconds behind. So some of our races where we have two horses here, 15 lengths back come another two horses and another few horses. So we want to give it the opportunity to let the owner, trainer of the horse in the Excelsior group is to have a B level, which will race for only $6,000, and there will be no points and no final for it. And that'll allow the horse that's, you know, not quite as good as the first group, but you kind of start grouping these horses together. So one, we have a better product to give to the betting public. And it also gives the horse that's just not quite as developed to have to race to try to learn, that he doesn't have to race all out to try to catch the group.
So there's a realistic opportunity to compete at some
Exactly, to compete. And it gives them, and it also gives them a place for when people buy these horses, you know, they could teach the horse a little something, and they can get a little bit of reward back for the money to help pay the bills. That's basically what the A and B is. The only thing with the B series is, so we don't have people, which I call jamming them down, taking a good horse and throwing them in there to try to, you know, win by 15 or something and pick up the $3,000 win check, is
You can race in the B class, but once you leave the B class to go back to the A or to another
sergeant, you can't go back down again.
You can't come back down again. The only horses that can go back up, back and forth, are the horses that race from a county fair level, the bottom of the bottom level. They can come up and race in one of these, and they can go back to a fair and come back and up, because that's basically what this level, I'm hoping, is just the step above the county fair level. And
if they initially start in the A and go down once, they can.
Yes, you can start in A and come down to B.
As soon as they go up.
As soon as you come out of B. Once you've raced in B,
you either stay there or go up, you can't go back.
The only horses that are the county fair horses.
Or I think it's annual, so if the following year there's a reason you're not competitive, it resets and you get the same opportunity the next year. One time.
I see. Okay. Yeah. That I missed.
See,
I thought it was
it
a permanent thing.
So
you can do that once a year is what you're saying.
The Excelsior conditions are different from the New York Starter Stakes. Once you nominate a horse at 1 year old for that $50, you have to follow these conditions for his 2 and 3 year old year. The Excelsior races are based on a yearly thing. They're a late closer. And so we can change these conditions every year. This is for 2014. If we need to tweak something as this program goes on, in 2015 we can change things in here in 15. The starter stakes, we don't. It's the way the rules are.
Okay, so the vote that we're potentially doing on the Excelsior series is just for the 1 year?
Yes, Excelsior
for 1 year. Okay. Yes. One last question, only because I haven't thought of this yet. Since they're separate, and yes, people will do this if it's not in here. They're paid in separate. Someone's paid into both, right? Sire Stakes and Excelsior. Participates zero in the Excelsior, but does exactly what you're saying. Even though they're eligible, they've never raced in the Excelsior. End of the year.
Can they come down?
They can they leave the Sire Stakes in a week they're not racing, race in the B, and go home. If we don't have a provision for that, we should enter into there. They cannot.
Well,
so if it's not in there, we should put in this.
Yeah, but it's very difficult to manage that, because you can have the thing why I don't think that's going to happen at the end of the year is if you're racing for $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 and you're competing all year in the New York Starter Stakes, I can't see why you give up an opportunity to hop out of a $50,000 or $60,000 race to come down and race for $6,000, you know. If it does, it's going to be very rare.
Yeah, I mean, the only one that would do it.
Baby
you know, just think. No, but thinking in the mind of if somebody has enough points to get to the final, and they're looking for something better than a qualifier for a tightener, and they were going to skip anyway, would there be enough larceny for them to go pick up?
Yeah, but why would you want to go do that and miss out on a $100,000 race or $90,000 race to race for $6,000? I mean, they're on the same day, same night.
I agree with you, but I bet you a nickel it happens.
No, I mean, if you want, I mean, I don't have a problem, but if you can provision it and somehow word it or come up with something, I mean,
we try it for a year and change it.
We can certainly try it. If it comes up, then we can add it in.
If we find all these people jumping down for $6,000.
It won't be a lot, but the screaming from one incident always, nobody's going to call you and tell you how great a job you're doing. You know?
Would you have an issue with trying it for this year and see what happens?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm just saying that there's always a chance, having, like Pete, made a living trying to get between the conditions and do whatever is legal but potentially not always fair.
So how what are you saying? And no horse can come out of A and go into B?
No, my thought would be,
the Sire Stakes and
if we said at some point in time, you know, I don't know what you say, if once you're halfway through the Sire Stakes season, a horse that's actively, and I don't know if you can quantify that, participating in the Sire Stakes, chooses to race in the B level of the, because there's things to keep them from going A to B, chooses to race in the B level, then I would say they forfeit their right to race in the final.
Okay, Harry, let's do this. No horse can go from the A from the New York Starter Stakes, if they're going to drop down, they have to go to A first. They can't go to B from there. Let's try that.
I lost.
Excuse me, can I just see those conditions? Because I thought when it was written, it said that if they raced in the Starter Stakes or A, they could not go down at all.
No. It says if a horse races in B series, they may move up at any time. Race from B, or maybe it's in here. So.
The county fair may go up or down, horse races in B, feet. If they go up to the feet,
there's nothing
they may not go back down.
Yeah,
so if they race up there.
No, so in other words, there's nothing in here about a New York Sire Stake. You can always drop down, but once you drop out of B, you can't go back up.
It's certainly
not. You can go back up, but you can't come back down.
I would say that, you know, after...
I think the easier way to do this would be, the easiest way to monitor this, and then here comes another problem. Who's going to sit and monitor every horse to say, wait a minute, did you race in, have you been in... So many Excelsior, you know, somebody's got to sit there when it comes draw day to say, is this horse ineligible for B or eligible for B? You know what I'm saying? So it becomes an issue in declaration. Somebody's going to have to monitor every division, every race, and every racetrack to find out if you put that in there, if somebody tries to do that, who's going to be the person to sit there
and talk to the charter and see if they're going to be able to label an A and B as well. You'll see the purses.
Yeah.
The purses.
But I tried to do this early. I had this rewritten differently, but with Betty, we talked about this in our Harness Horse Breeders meeting, is how to monitor, who's going to keep track of it all. And it became a nightmare, and that's why we came up with this.
No, I think this in itself is clean. And we can try it this year. And yeah. If it becomes a problem,
right.
Then we can look at language in the future.
Somebody's got a really
Is that what we're
horse?
Talking about doing? We tried this for a year.
Yes.
Betty had suggested language that if it doesn't work, if the phenomenon you talk about does occur,
right.
We think about introducing some of the language right. that she had suggested,
yep.
And then we get to the right. issue that someone else raised.
This
how you
want
to enforce oversight and monitoring.
That's
right. You know?
Why this becomes a yearly thing. So,
okay.
Right. I think we should try it.
We're trying this in general yeah. because a strong support from the guys trying to make a living with the blue-collar horses, so
yeah.
to speak, came forth and said, hey, you got to help us. We're getting killed.
Right.
And so we're trying it, and if it's got a glitch or two,
very good.
Then we'll change it.
And the other thing for the future is these county fairs, we don't know what's going on over there. That's also a place for them to come up and step up if they have
okay.
So, but let's, I think, you know, like I said, Excelsior, since we started it every year, we tweak it a little bit. And if we have to tweak it next year, we will. We have that right to do that.
Okay. Are there any more discussion?
No. Move it.
Second? Okay. Vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Are there any more of the
county
fair race conditions?
County fair.
Do you have one of those?
We're sharing. We get lost.
You know, really? I don't.
It's the buddies.
Yeah, this one I have. Yeah, this one I have. This.
Okay.
Yeah,
sorry.
You might
there were some of the last
this
pages on this
thing. I thought this is what
getting
we
paper. That's never wise.
This is we just did. This.
Yeah, we just did that.
This one.
There you go.
This is it. That's it. We're good.
You got it. Good.
Yep.
You
need
thank
anything?
You.
Are you okay? You're good? Okay. We'll figure it out. We're good.
Okay, these are the county fair conditions. I can't even tell you what the revisions are for it. They're not in red.
Well, can someone just summarize? Betty can help us.
Betty,
she can summarize. Yeah, please.
I don't have my...
There was only a couple of real changes. One change was I'll start from the back. We have had a lot of people with the county fair writing starting fee checks and they bounce.
Oh, that's
and
okay.
The tracks have no recourse because they race at one fair and they move on to
mm-hmm.
the other. So by adding in language saying basically that if you bounce a check, you can be refused entry at the next fair unless you pay it, that will ensure that everyone pays their responsibilities.
Okay.
And that also applies to the Park Mutual tracks as well. I don't think there were a whole lot of other changes. Now,
was there something you said about the veterinarian, that they wanted veterinarian?
That's,
no,
fair.
That's a whole separate
okay.
deal.
Maybe Mike can
also, remember. Too, in both of these, the supplementary February payment would also be
March 1st
okay.
on all three conditions. That just runs through. Just to note that. That's it. That was the only change that I can remember now. So basically what we have here, this is what we want
we got
to,
it? Okay.
To vote on.
Questions? Discussion? Do we have a motion?
Yep.
Second. Vote. Favor. All right. Okay. Thank you.
And that's it for conditions.
We've covered all the conditions, sir?
Yes. That's
okay.
It.
Very good. The next item, I think, is this item 4 on the agenda, and that relates to the MOU between the fund and the Gaming Commission. Memorandum of Understanding between the New York State Gaming Commission and the Agriculture and New York State Horse Breeding Development Center. The MOU essentially indicates the Office of Racing, Promotion and Development within the Gaming Commission will provide support in administering the Ag Fund, and the fund shall utilize the service employees of the Commission as well as pay the Gaming Commission a pro rata share of the Commission's rent based upon the square footage of space utilized by the fund. The MOU can be found in tab number 4 in the binder. And this, a lot of this comes out of the legislation establishing the Gaming Commission last year. We're doing the MOU in the process of finalizing that between the Thoroughbred Fund and the Gaming Commission. And what we're looking to do here replicates that process, I think. And correct me if I'm wrong, particularly Mike, because he deals with that day to day. It should help in a lot of instances and help administering things more, providing administrative supports that aren't necessarily there in the past. And more importantly, I see it as the ability to address a lot of the technology issues, particularly around the website, that we can have the consolidated IT operation for the state, start taking some responsibility for that activity. Hopefully speed up the issue that you're talking about, online payments and whatnot. I think that after we put the MOU in place, that will be an early on meeting we set up with the Gaming Commission staff on how we address the website issues for the fund, so at least we can have that more updated information, better, but more importantly, have it more functional for some of your administrative tasks and kind of relieve some of those burdens there. You know, it's to shake that out. But that's the, as I understand it, that's the intent of having the MOU in place. And it comes out of the statute, and it's not unusual for the Gaming Commission entering into those agreements with a number of the other funds and entities that are related to it. Any discussion? Yep.
Yeah, because there's a lot in here I have no understanding of. So I was curious, is there a chain of command change? Who's in charge of what? Who's responsible for what? Would be my first thoughts here. And who reports to who? And then the other thing would be, is there funds that need to come out of our budget to pay for stuff for this?
Well,
may I?
Please.
Certainly. The chain of command that you speak of would remain the same. So Mike Blaney, the executive director, would answer directly to the board, to you and Peter and
the commission.
Well, I would still remain as an employee of the Gaming Commission and report to my supervisor, Rob Williams. So essentially, I would continue my role as a facilitator, and I think at least you two know what I'm doing here. And continue to implement, I would implement the prescribed changes to the statute, which would be simply the MOU, simply. Tracks the expenses incurred, uses, as the chairman said, the IT system that's in place, and I would keep track and monitor the use of service employees. For example, Brian Squadares as a senior account at the Gaming Commission, working with Mr. Mullaney and with the board. And that's essentially what the statute does. And of course, we would have to figure out, you know, per square footage rent and things like that.
So that compensation is basically for the physical space.
Yes.
Our portion of it to
equipment. That hasn't happened yet.
No. But the other things as far as salaries or anything else, we basically still get to come crying to you if we need something and you help us for nothing.
I don't consider crying. No, there would be the you would if you use legal would this would be out of, and also I've already talked to finance about this, the finance department within the gaming commission, because I don't want any questions at the end of the month with the executive director or the board. So if audit, if the accounting is used and legal is used, at the end of every single day, it would be presented every day, daily, to the executive director that accounting within the gaming commission used 1.5 hours at this rate. Legal utilize the services of Mr. Sekelic or anybody else in council for 2 hours at the rate of. It would be signed off by the executive director daily,
and that would be part
if
of
the board. If you want the executive director to report to you on a daily basis, then that would be your call. But and then at the end of the month, finance would review the data, the expenses, and present to the board.
So at the end of the month, the board would act. We're not going to get into stuff daily, but
no,
at the end of the month, we would
be
able to.
The executive director will, though, because I don't want at the end of, and this is just my opinion, but at the end of the month, I don't want any questions that legal will take. We shouldn't have 10 hours of fees for the month of March. I only recall Mr. Skellick, working this for 2 hours. So there aren't any problems. We'll review it daily. I will review it. My office will review it daily with Tracy Egan on the Thoroughbred side and Mike Blaney on the Agri side.
So in other words, let's say Mike beats somebody out in the hall and they talk for 5 minutes.
No.
It's got to be really
this
something.
Central services dedicated to the advancement of your program.
Okay. And then, but there's no supervision. I mean, you guys don't do any supervision. You're just...
Mike still works for the board.
Right, okay.
And as far as us reporting to somebody else, is there something above and beyond that, or we get stuck with it? It stops at us, and if we mess it up, it's our problem.
You're the board.
Yes.
As far as...
Jesus, baby.
I'll take what I can get. Him or my wife.
Michael, you're one of the five chosen. So I hope I've explained it.
One thing I wasn't clear on, how long is the MOU for? Is it year to year, or is it...
That's a good question. I can't answer that. Mr. Burns?
Yeah, until either side terminates.
Okay, very good. Okay. Any further discussion? We have a motion?
Yes.
Second? Vote? All right?
Yep.
Okay, thank you. Item 5, and this one I probably know, I've been getting tutored the last few days and hours, and this one I know less about than anything. Approval of redesign of the Breeders' Awards. There are changes as suggested by the Harness Breeders and supporters of the Ag Fund. An adjustment to the formula used to determining the Breeders' Awards has been made. The adjustment would put the accent on more residency in New York, combination with the performance of that mare's offspring on the racetrack. The principle to the adjustment is to reward those breeders who keep their mares in New York State for the 180 days already required to qualify for a residency award. It will be a gradual process leading to 2017, when breeders' awards will be based 100% on the combination of performance and mare residency. The belief is that the lead up to 2017 will encourage breeders to keep their mares in state as opposed to transporting their mares out of state immediately after marrying. Is there any discussion to this adjustment? And who's best here to summarize what we're doing here?
You
gotta
take a shot, Mike?
Everybody's pointing their finger at me.
I'll take a shot at it. The bottom line, as Peter stated, the New York product is at this time and at many different times over the last 3 years, yeah, been the most sought-after product in racing. And other states that have set aside even greater amounts of money occasionally come under attack for that money. We don't have a ridiculous amount set aside. We set aside less than I believe in the law we're allowed to set aside. But people that breed to our stallions and participate in the program, they, many of them, you know, if they're in Kentucky or they're in Canada and they meet our minimum requirement to have a horse, they could have a horse for days or hours in the state of New York, mm-hmm, and it would be eligible to be a fully eligible New York racehorse, sire stake horse, if they follow up with the payments. The Breeders' Awards were designed to reward the people making more of a commitment that are involved in the breeding and raising of them. Well, if it was with no residency, those same people in Canada or Pennsylvania, mm-hmm, or Kentucky who have their own programs would get this for free. And what we're trying to do is not exclude them, but include them and ask them to put the horses on our farms.
Yeah.
No, not just breed to our stands and get big money at the sales, but to be able to, the people that are paying labor, putting up fence, paying horseshoers, paying veterinarians, paying for feed and hay in the state of New York for 180 days, they would eventually be the only ones that receive this extra bonus used to encourage them to be here and drive agriculture, okay, at the greatest commitment. And that's why, without going out of our way to double or triple to get more teeth in this, by pulling in the parameters and who gets it, we get the same effect. Okay.
I know we're not doing this tomorrow, but how do we guarantee that somebody's going to be here for, how do we monitor this?
We already do, which is the beauty of it. We're already checking, and the ones that aren't here don't participate. Mm-hmm. And it actually makes it easier. We actually get to do... It's already in place, right, but what's going to happen eventually, and the reason it's time-sensitive now, we're already breeding mares. So you want to give people the chance to be here and participate in this. That's why the foals of 2015, next year's foals, are the first ones that really get this 100% residency. We've got to give them a chance to participate. We already have the records from last year, so there'd be no way to reward the people that never got a chance to do it. So it actually simplifies it and gives it more encouragement for people to participate in the program.
Any further discussion, questions? We have a motion?
Yes.
Second?
Second.
Vote? All right. Okay. Thank you. The next item is something that we discussed earlier, and that's approval of the 2014 budget. The proposed budget for this year can be found if you look in tab 6 in your book. The 2014 budget for the Sire Stakes program is $16.665 million, compared to the 2013 budget, which resulted in expenditures of around $20 million. Okay. Ryan, can you,
yep,
sum things up,
yep,
for us, please?
I certainly will. We spent a lot of time putting the budget together this year, and for those of you who have the books, if you look at tab 6 there, we start off right on page 1. It's the projection of income for the track and the OTB, including the VLTs. In our 2014 budget, we got $15.1 million for funds received within the calendar year. In 2013 and 2012, that's been about $15.4 million both years. So it's about a 2% decrease than what we had in prior years, and that's, you know, being conservative. However, there's the new ADW law 2014 that just came about gives the fund more money. So that's not in the budget. So that's anywhere between $300,000 to $500,000 more coming in
calendar
year. Yeah, in the calendar year that we didn't,
And we're starting to collect that already.
Yeah. January is we saw the first month of it coming in, and so, you know, in essence, it was about $19,000 for January, and, you know, January is generally our least lowest gambling month, so I imagine when those summer months hit, that could, you know, that could rise to a pretty nice number, but we'll see as that time goes on there. So that's the money coming in from the tracks and the OTBs. The second page, you know, as she discussed, you know, Sarah State versus, you know, we're basically looking somewhere around in the neighborhood of $10 million. 2013 versus were 11.4. Do with a similar comparison, so it's about $1.4 million decrease. You know, again, and that's eliminating the $400,000 full harvest this year. You know, I know we discussed Star Stakes versus previously, so I don't have to go into that a lot. The third page is the horseman income, and then this year, the budget, and last year, you know, they're both in the neighborhood of about $1.5 million, so we don't expect a whole heck of a lot of change there. You know, that should run.
If you want, you can grab a chair. You don't have to stand if you don't want.
Okay. You
okay?
Okay,
good.
One quick question here. Betty, the first round of nominations, are we up, down, where are we at?
The three-year-olds are up, the three-year-olds are down considerably.
Considerably? Mm-hmm. So we might have to look at $1.5 million, sure. Maybe $1.2 million. But,
no, understood. No, I know. I know there's some fluctuation. Yeah. We're, you know, this was our best guess. We didn't do it all. So, the fourth page, you see a little bit more breakdown on the purses. Within there, you see the Excelsior purses mentioned. 2014 total, we got $3.7 million, and again, that includes the Goshen as well. And when we looked at 2013, it came out to about $3.4 million. Now, it's a little bit of an increase this year over last year, but again, as you mentioned, we got the addition of Goshen coming in
someplace.
So, you know, we can kind of justify that. And the county purses, again, we believe it's going to be around $608,000. I mean, that's fairly consistent as well. So, on the sixth page, you see a little summary of an income statement. If you look at the expenses, 2014 expenses, we got $16.7 million. 2013 expenses were $17.9 million. And actually, 2012 expenses were $19.1 million. So, as you can see, we're heading in the right direction. $19.1 million in 2012, $17.9 million in 2013, $16.7 million. And again, we had the reduction in purses. We had about a $400,000 reduction in budget. So, you know, it's okay. You know, it's what we had to do on that. And the last page you see on the financial results, page 7. If you take a look, basically 2012 net income was $2.7 million loss. 2013 net income was about $1.5 million loss. And, you know, this year we're going to call this break even. We're going to say 16.7 on the income, 16.7 on expenses. And given our cuts and the money that has consistently come in, I think that's realistic. It's going to be a break even. I think the Ag Fund is supposed to be a break even department. You know, it should be theoretically break even. You know, we started the year, January 1st this year, at $7.4 million cash. So theoretically, if we have $7.4 million cash at the beginning of the year, we collect 16.7, we pay 16.7, you know, in a perfect world, January 1st, 2015, if, you know, if we're in that neighborhood of $7 million, then, you know,
normally, at the beginning of the year, you're at that 7, below that, less than that, above that, or?
Well, it has fluctuated. Last year, I think we were around about $8 million at the beginning of the year. But, you know, you guys have mentioned.
Little reserves.
Yeah, we've had some reserves, and we kept digging into those reserves. And if we can cut this tight and get revenue to equal expenses, you know, and then we can kind of stabilize this whole program, I think, and really for the long term, it's really going to, you know, we can look at it and say, hey, we broke even this year. We did well. We still got $7 million in the bank. We're doing a good job, you know. Just can really prolong what we're trying to do here, I think.
All we have the ability to think about how they're going to program that $700,000 and just...
Right. See, here's the thing. We always want to look at July 1st to June 30th. That's the whole secret, okay? Now, if we got $7.4 million,
correct.
How many months do we have to go? Do you think we collect the $16.6 million that you're going to need to spend out?
Well, again, last year we had $8 million in the first half of the year we received. And then we had, you know, $7.5 million the second 6 months of the year. So, you know, if we have 7.4 and we have 8, 15.4. So, yeah, we're going to be needing a little bit, but I don't know, again, if we get to the end of the year and revenue even with expenses and we have that money, then I think seems like we're doing what we're supposed to be doing. I know what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, ideally, you'd like to
cut off. In other words, after June 30th, any money comes in has to go to 2015.
I know.
That's, I mean, that's the way we, I mean, we were always able to do it because you always had reserves, but...
If we get to, do we have the ability, it's a budget, if we get to April, even early April, our program starts in May, and we look at this and we have real concerns that we have to dip into July, which would be theoretically 2015 money, we could make an adjustment starting the season on all the tracks and what they're getting, or whatever. We can make an adjustment somewhere
on
the Sire Stakes money.
Because they can
be a little proactive. If you came to us in April, is this a possibility? You can say, you know what, we're going to miss the mark. The winter weather, stymied gambling at some of our bigger racetracks that churn out the most gambling money, BLT money, and we're going to be behind. I don't think we're going to hit the mark. Can we shave out $700,000 or $1 million? We could do that before we start paying purses, right? Is there the ability to measure it that way?
Well, adjust to what we're paying along as we go.
Well, so the new goal,
right before we start.
Before we start. In other words, before you send out that first deposit for the first race. Mm-hmm. In other words, we take a look at this in April because, you know, see where we are and say,
sure.
Okay, instead of sending 2.9 to Yonkers, you do 2.5 or 2.6 is what I'm saying. And that's what they're going to, and then you divide that out equally, and that's what they
get. Well, I mean, that was the decision we could do. Yeah. And then you're saying, what, Yonkers would absorb the other balance of that?
No. That's all you get to go to the purse.
Okay.
So we just, instead of using the budget we got, we shorten the budget up by
10%.
And it primarily comes in the form of purse adjustment.
Because these purses are estimates. When we send this in January, they're estimates.
Okay.
That way we don't, if it's good, great. If it's not good, I just don't want to be on a runaway train that when we get to January 1st next year, we're looking at $5.5 million, and then we say, I'd rather be a little proactive.
I would suggest it's a budget.
Right.
This is a board. Right. That would be our obligation to do that, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. But what my thing is, I'm trying to get back on that June 30th date. I know it might take a year or so, but we really need to. The other thing is, if you think you're going to use the receipts, all our purses are paid by September 1st. I mean, you're usually a month ahead of when you deposit.
Pretty much. Yeah, I know the first purse is the end of May.
The Night of Champions is September 13th.
Okay.
And if you need to go into August and September for those receipts that we received from BLTs and stuff to pay that $1.8 million for the Night of Champions, which is our last check that we write, that money you might not see till December. So how would you, if we start learning how to do that or start doing that, how would we make the payments if we're lacking $3 million in receipts from the tracks that haven't paid us yet? I mean, is there a reserve someplace that you can...
You say, how do we do that?
How would you write I'd be writing a bounce check in my checking account if I had to pay my bills out and I'm not going to get any receipts. How would we do that?
No, I hear what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, the money's been, so far, we've had enough money to cover everything and we've been good with it.
Right.
But, I hear what you're saying.
Sure,
what happens if we get to that point and we've used up our $7.4 million at the beginning of the year?
Yeah, that's going to be gone now. That's going to be gone in the first few months.
I
know we have in the budget we have 700,000 in breeders awards which don't get paid till December, so that's a help.
Right.
I don't know on Mike's budget. We haven't even talked about his budget yet. But Mike, do you spend more of your money at the first half of the year or the second half of the year?
Or is it kind of even? Funding our county fairs that will take any Excelsior raises. So I will guess midsummer is where.
Yeah, that's
midsummer. I mean your administration budget.
The administration
not the first.
Matters. I guess tote bags and hats are usually a springtime acquisition.
So most of our expenses, we usually spend $300 or $1,000 on supplies.
Well, it's like you said, though, Pete. At the end of the year, you have your Breeders' Awards. Yeah. That's the end of the year. You have your county fair reimbursements and admin fee. That's the end of the year.
Yeah, I'm just wondering how much money that we don't have to worry about in our 16.5 that could be done in December.
Well,
just so you got something to play with.
The biggest driver is purse expense. mean, the admin budget, it doesn't really cost a lot to run this department, so to speak. You know, we're not spending a ton of money. We're not. Yeah. I mean, we're, you know, most of our expenses is in purses. So,
I know.
I hear what you're saying.
I just don't want to get into September. And
I know. I'm
one of the guys responsible here, so I just want to.
I wouldn't want to get into any expenditure without letting you guys know how that affects Brian's budget as well.
Because you figured what we get about $1.2 million per month.
$1.2 million, $1.3 million a month, and I've been really hard on track.
Times 6 months, so that's $7 million, right? $7.5 million on top of seven. So you're close to the 15, but we're at 16. So yeah. I mean, it's going to be close if we, you know, if we have to depend on August and September receipts to pay our bills by September. And I know how, you know, in years past we. You know, sometimes we've always haven't seen that money for 60, 90 days. So,
but I've been very hard on the track. Well, I know. We've worked on that. I've been getting on those guys.
I can say one thing. Working with Brian the past year, as he's kind of learning this, is I told him to get a hold of all the tracks because they'll short you, and he's done that. He's gotten them up to speed and collected everything we got coming.
Yeah. Okay. So what is the suggested time frame that we make sure we have a budget revisit? Are you talking about May that we look, or June?
May 1st.
Our first stake race is third week of May.
Oh yeah, theoretically, we can look at this on May 1st.
Come back in a couple of months. And
they usually do the direct deposit about the first of May. You'd be sending your first.
Usually a couple weeks before the race, and then start running them.
So if we needed to do it, we needed to do it prior to sending them.
Let's do it. It would be a healthy thing to do a revisit May 1st just to see where we are.
Great.
And if we've got to take some action, then we'll schedule to do that.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Brian, for our administration budget. What number, how much is that, Mike? Without going through this again.
Brian, you got the register ready?
What's our administration budget?
How much we're planning? I mean, we got our purse, as we know, then everything else falls underneath administration.
Administration.
A bit over $1 million.
Yeah, I thought.
A little over $1 million.
Okay. $1.1 million, $1.2 million, somewhere in that neighborhood.
And out of that?
1098.
Okay. And out of that, other than like payroll and all that stuff, we got to start paying, you know, for our office and all that stuff. That's all calculated in there.
That is within the budget.
Yeah, I think it's assumed everything has to be done. Whatever you, the shared agreement, everything's got to be done within the confines of that for salary.
And even that time allotment with the service employees, maybe that's something I can anticipate and send to you guys. Where if I need 3 hours,
did you keep track of this? Did we pay for, like, Brian's been working here almost a year with us? And we haven't paid them for none of that. Do we owe them back for that?
No, not retroactive.
But we will once we approve this.
Yeah. Do you have any idea if we did pay what it might have been for 13?
I'll be tightening up my business with Brian from now on.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
Yeah, we don't have lunch together, maybe I'll prep business.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Yep.
We have a motion to approve the budget.
Make a motion.
Second?
Sure.
In favor? Under tab 7 of your folder, you'll see a lot of space taking up regarding policies. And basically, what we need to look at is approving policies for the fund that are policies for all state agencies, entities, and authorities. Normal state agencies don't have to go through this approval process because they happen directly. But as a board, we have to approve the state agency policies for violence in the workplace, sexual harassment, affirmative action, undeposited deposited checks, Project Sunlight, which is basically openness in government, for lack of a better term, minority with MWBE, enterprises, lobbying, hiring, equipment control, communications and computers, credit card usage, cash receipts, collection procedures, procurement, whistleblowing, records retention, investments, disposal of property, and grants. And basically, it's the action that we're looking to take here is for this, the fund, to approve the policies that are applicable to all of the state agencies. If you find tab 7 there, you find it there, yeah, and you'll see, and it's somewhat thick, but basically it's backup of what the content of each of the policies.
I would move it.
I only had questions on a few.
Okay.
Let me just get it here, but and it's later in the list, so I think it'd be like the record retention for starters, which I think is that P.
Yep. It goes on for several pages, I think. Is that the one? Yeah.
Records management, retention, and destruction policy.
So, did you find it? Because I have it here.
I got it back here. I made a couple notes here since I went along. That's grants. I think it got around to most of my thoughts on that was the elimination of records and what we got rid of and what our policy is on keeping track of information we may or may not need to go back to, like whether it be, you know, the deletion of emails or, you know, even electronic records. I think sometimes it becomes very useful to be able to go back at those records and get an accurate accounting of what transpires sometimes, as opposed to getting things piecemeal. And I'm not completely sure, you know, as far as what records we keep, what we get rid of, who doesn't. I think that I might be inclined till we were more comfortable on that. That kind of falls into the cover our behinds portion of what I would think about it. I'm just not sure what it is when we get rid of documents or get rid of emails and what our exposure is to anything like that. I don't know if
there's a line in here that just says that most correspondence and internal memoranda should be retained for the same period as the document they pertain to and support. So if you got a 10-year, document you need to hang on to for accounting reasons, then the emails that go along with that should be retained for that same period of time. So if it's not, if it's an email that's doesn't pertain to anything, I think it's suggested 2 years.
I think so, yeah.
As it stands, our email is on a server of the email provider, and the website provider is the same entity. And I could find email from the beginnings of my time here with them. And as we move as we migrate the email to a possible new candidate, there'll be a required request to retain all the emails as best we can. And with the hard copy storage documents, we were document challenged when we first came here. Not everything was in its place. So what we have in storage right now. The third party.
Hey, sir.
That which is not readily available here.
Here's what I just does not have a page number. That would seem to be appropriate.
All right, and then
you're right. We need to save. We went around that. What couch did we make? Why did you make that decision?
Yeah, we need to know why we do what we do for sure. The only other things on here. Certainly, the grants struck me as a different way of doing business than I recall it ever being done in the past. I was kind of under the impression that when we, as far as the grants coming before the board, it was the board that made the decisions on whether we have the money to spend and who we spend it with.
Yes.
And I'm not sure if this is allowing us to not meet our obligation by passing it off and dumping that on Mike, and if that's fair to do to him or even right for us to do.
Those are all but the first five policies mentioned are inherent, were in place. So if you would like me to rewrite policies.
This is always how we handle the grants?
No. Now, where's your issue on that?
The grants, what
you're talking about?
What page do we have?
4B? I got Roman numeral 4B that talks about responsibility and authority of the executive director. Is that?
Yeah, right? I think that's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so it talks about has sole authority. We can always change that language to determine the eligibility. It's not necessarily, as I read it, doesn't necessarily granting the awards. It's who's eligible and not eligible. Eligibility
and
of applicants.
And the award of
and
grants.
The awards of grants to applicants.
I'm just kind of going between books, so it's hard.
Okay. Okay, so how would you suggest we change that language? Executive director in consultation with the fund or fund board or...
Well, somehow it should be where he can work on getting all the applications and applicants,
yeah,
and stuff, and then the grant should be approved by the fund trustees. That's the way it's always been done in the past. But
okay,
we need to have a little system of checks and balances.
Very good.
After our previous,
okay,
director.
That makes good sense.
All right. Do we want to do some language now, or do we want to keep the current policy in place and revisit this item later?
No, I just assume we can do that.
Okay.
Now,
anyone have suggested language we can?
Yeah. I would just want to add in that the fund trustees, everything has to be approved by the fund trustees when it comes to the approval of the grants.
Okay. Grant awards.
Yep.
Right.
Must have the approval of fund trustees.
Yep.
Everybody, is
yep.
that? Okay.
That way we have a little system.
Very good. Okay. That's fine.
Yeah.
Okay. And in that case, I would eliminate the language here. You have sole for yourself, at least so that makes that clear.
I mean, how we normally do it, Mike would bring the grants today, and we go through them, and then
that's an item on here when we get to expenditures.
Exactly.
We have a series of those we're going to be doing.
I mean, but when you go through all this stuff, and
your intent is not to get too far away from that policy, and I didn't read this that way, but since there were two different interpretations, let's make it clear, okay?
Yeah.
All right, anything else? Okay, do we have a motion to approve?
I'll make the motion.
Second?
Second.
In favor?
Aye.
Okay, and that is assuming we're pending the change in the language here, okay?
Exactly.
Very good.
I'm going to have to leave in about 10 minutes. So
okay.
Action
items. I think we can go through. The commissioner is going to have to depart us soon, so what I'd like to do is to concentrate on some items that are going to need some approvals, and I think the area that is the next one is really the expenditures more than anything else that we're going to need some approvals on. Okay, and there are 9 items listed under item 8 you'll find in your tab there, and we'll address each one separately, and they're all expenditure proposals. There is a request for $13,950 from the United States Trotters Association to cover the cost for meals and educational materials for the 2014 driving school at the Harness Racing Museum in Goshen.
It's a great
discussion?
Program.
Okay.
great program, and
very good.
One of the things that puts a good face on us compared to other things.
Very good. Do we have a motion?
I'd make a motion.
Okay, second. Okay, favor. All right, okay. Okay. The next item is vision benefit package. The two employees of the fund explicitly lost eye vision benefits. The eye vision benefit package will cost the fund approximately $13,000 per month for the restoration of their eye vision package. $13 a month for the restoration. Yeah, for their restoration of their benefit package. Any discussion? Question?
Mike, the coverage that takes care of what you think most of your needs would be, it's a decent policy.
I believe so, yeah. Connie and I both looked at it. Connie's pretty well versed with things along those lines. And we had it, and it just, for whatever reason, disappeared.
Well, I'd make a motion to accept it.
Okay, second?
Second. Can I ask, is that going to be the plan that you were on and they took you off?
Yeah.
That's the only plan I know.
Yeah.
It's through the state.
Yes.
Okay. So we're all clear? We're good? Okay, very good. Harness Racing Update Proposal. The Ag Fund proposes contracting with Harness Racing Update, which is an internet standardbred news service providing advertising, handicapping analysis, video replay, and entries results from harness tracks from across the United States. The cost of the service is $300 per month. The total cost of the contracts is per week. I'm sorry. The total cost of the service is $300 per week for the remainder of 2014, which would be 43 weeks. The total cost of this contract is $12,900. Any questions, discussion?
Best thing we can ever do.
That's okay. Separate than the Apple policy, or is that the same thing?
That's the Apple?
Yeah.
The Apple ad?
On their, everybody likes that. They automatically associate it with New York. I think it's good.
We have a motion. Second. Vote. As soon as we start spending money, it goes like this. Okay. External audit proposal. The Agricultural and New York State Breeders Development Fund is audited internally and externally on an annual basis. The fund issued an RFP for the audit. The low bid of $10,000 was submitted by, correct me if I'm pronouncing this wrong, Valles and Vendiola, is that correct?
Vendiola.
Yeah, Vendiola of Elmhurst, New York. The firm audited the fund's 2012 financial books and is listed in the state's minority MWBE directory. Is there any discussion regarding the proposed contract for the audit? Do we have a motion?
I make a motion.
Second?
Sure.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay. The Hemlock Museum Proposal. The Hemlock Lake Union Agricultural Society submitted a proposal requesting a grant from the Ag Fund for $2,500 for improvements to the museum and grounds as outlined in the letter defining the project. I think that should be somewhere in your binder. And we have any questions?
This is about 20 minutes from my home, and yep. I've seen it, and it's a very good for our room that they're doing, and I think we should accept it.
Very good. We have a motion?
Sure.
Second? Okay, vote. All right. Okay. The next item is the correspondent MOU, and I'll discuss what this is, but I don't think we're going to have enough time to really resolve this today, and I think it's going to be worthy of further discussion. So the fund plans to increase exposure by contracting with a correspondent who will provide standardbred news articles and updates for the fund. The cost of the contract is $2,000 per month from May through the final Sire Stakes event, the Night of Champagne on Champions, on September 13th. The compensation is intended not to exceed $15,000. We're not going to have, I think this is going to be something that we're going to have to discuss further. And since we have until May to finalize this, I'd prefer that we wait to give it the attention that it really is going to require and deserve and come back at that time. So I recommend that we table this for the moment, okay?
Yeah.
Because we run into caps and whatnot. Okay. Proposed funding of the 2014 New York State Association of County Fairs brochure. The Ag Fund provided $5,200 for production of the New York State County Fair Guide. The brochure provides an image of harness racing on the brochure cover and indicated county fairs that provide harness racing. The New York State Associated Agricultural Fairs Inc. requests $5,200 for the 2014 brochure. Any discussion?
Last year, that came out of something, like that was part of something else we did, right?
It was part of the $100,000, I don't know what word it would be, but it was money that went to county fairs.
And we carved this portion out of that,
exactly,
is that right?
Yeah.
Do you think somewhere in here, you know, if we incorporate, certainly if you go online and Google the county fairs or something, is it better to have something directed to our website here as far as how we're spending our money? These are at the rest areas, and where do we leave these brochures?
Yes, yeah, so rest stops, information booths, tourist information booths, et cetera, places like that.
In your opinion, do you think we get real attention out of that when they're doing that, or do you think there's another way, you know, even if you put a poster up at the rest area, which would cost, you know, for limited rest areas, are you saving, I know it seems like pennies, but are we saving money along the way to have a presence to put it in somebody's mind as opposed to these other things they're going to toss out, and then maybe, you know, we highlight our website, which they can go to, which would give them the same, similar information?
I could look into the posters and things like that. I don't know if there's any regulations about putting a poster on a rest.
Well, you have to make a decision on this.
I would just make a comment that's, I believe, that schedule of the county fairs is very widely used for people going to fairs, because I believe it's one of the few documents that lists all the fairs that are going on in the state of New York.
So it has an effect beyond us.
Oh, yeah. I think people use it for the schedule.
So it's kind of a support of county fairs.
Yeah.
This is for all the county fairs statewide?
I believe that.
Yeah, it lists all of them as the phone numbers on them. And I saw it somewhere.
When they run, when the fairs are.
You should have a copy of your binders.
Mm-hmm.
Inside, it's a trifold, and inside the trifold is a listing of the state fairs with an asterisk for those that conduct harness racing.
When do you have to? So we've got a. This isn't something we can table. We should decide this now, correct?
Jack, do you think it's something to table?
Well, I'm just saying, you can see it's a fair guide here. It's predominant. I mean, you've got to look at it.
They use our logo in the back.
You're looking at the.
Yeah, it's not. I
saw it. You know, so. Something to do, but I'm just saying that is.
Yeah, but the question to you is, you see significance in this.
Yeah, I do. Okay. I mean, if it's exposure on something that's used widely at all county fairs.
And this comes out of part of your budget. Is this under the budget, or is this extra beyond the 16?
Might be part of that supplies and materials.
Okay. Well, I mean, but it's in, we've got money in there.
Yeah, that should be within the confines of the 1.1 that you have.
That's it.
But it's part
all
of
items of this type are included within that. Yeah. Is an anticipated activity that's there.
So maybe we should just do it.
Okay.
So do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Second. Yeah. Vote. Okay. All right. Okay. Very good. Under saddle purse funding, which is.
What the heck is that?
That's a
standardbred trotter or pacer they have. Is they put the saddle on them like the thoroughbreds, and they have races with them. So you're racing under saddle instead of the harness and the sulky.
In Europe, it's done quite frequently for a lot of money. They did it here a few years back. Actually, many years back, they did it quite a bit. Then it went away for a while. The Monty program that they call it. It certainly creates a curiosity.
And they have to trot while they're doing it?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think we've had certainly a good response from people watching it. You know, mm-hmm. Nobody walks away and skips that part. It's enough different that it draws a crowd. It shows the versatility of our breed, which I think is
I've never heard of it before.
Is a good thing. Yeah. It's certainly not a huge movement. A lot of the different farms and racetracks are supporting it, and kicking up a little here or there.
If it was going on at our county fairs, which I think is what they're asking for,
yeah, the
it'll be the thing everybody notices the most other than the silly carriage horses.
Yeah, I guess the request is for $6,000 to provide races at three fairs, Morris, Goshen, and Afton.
I think they want to expand it to six fairs. Last year they had...
They said they want to go four to six fairs in a final or something like that.
Okay.
They're very good at for asking for a lot, and they would take less. So I don't think they're going to ask us to fund the whole thing. So if we wanted to do the whole thing, we could.
Well, what are we doing here? We're doing 6,000, or is this 6,000 in addition to another commitment?
They're asking for six.
Okay.
You can give them six, you can give them four. I know the people that run it.
Since you've got some room to negotiate, somebody suggest a number.
About four.
Okay. Four. Okay, second? Exactly. All those in favor?
Aye.
Good. Very good. Item 9, County Fair's proposed Rule 38, County Fair Reimbursement Policy for 2014. Each qualified county fair that conducts an approved harness racing program shall be eligible to receive a sum not to exceed $6,000 for amounts expended for repairs of its grounds and buildings, provided that 25% of the sum is specifically designated for improvements to the racetrack, horse barns, and other harness racing facilities. Each qualified fair is also eligible to receive $2,000 to help or assist in the defray of the cost of administration of the racing program. This rule has not changed. We've had this rule in previous years, and this year we're not changing things, okay? Any discussion?
Okay with that.
Okay. This is the same thing it's been in years past.
Same thing,
yes.
Okay.
All right.
We have a motion?
Make a motion.
Second? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. Okay. Okay, and now we have... I don't think we really have anything else that we need votes on. We have discussion items. Seriously? So, Commissioner, if you want to depart, you can. We've got discussion items.
And I got a green light.
Yeah, we've got nothing. So anytime, you know, like, I won't feel bad. And
don't
we won't feel bad. We won't feel embarrassed, you know?
All right. Thank you so much.
You're not here to tug on my shoulder. You're messing up again, kid. You know, so we're fine. Okay, we have a few discussion items. And,
thank you so much.
First
everybody.
Rule is yeah. Nice meeting you, sir.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Appreciate
your time. I'll see you later. Okay. Can you, Jackie, I'll talk to you tomorrow, okay?
Thank you for your help, Jackie.
Someone has some information.
Good to see you.
My goodness.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. We settle down? Yeah, because we don't need a quorum, and even if we do, we've got enough. It's 3 out of 5, right? We need 5 people. We've got 4, so we're good for the moment. Okay. The fund endeavors to organize and update the language of current rules, regulations, and the laws by which the fund and the standardbred industry is governed. This is a first step toward rule promulgation, which must include industry comment. And we wanted to allot some time if we wanted to have a brief discussion on rule promulgation, or is it something that we really need more time and we can do that at our next session?
We can probably do that at our next session.
Yep, very good. The Zweig Fund, Zweig Fund is statutorily mandated to create an account in which 2% of its annual revenues are designated for equine research. The Ag Fund has been a major contributor to the Cornell University's Zweig Memorial Fund. The Zweig Fund conducts a variety of research, including causes and possible cures for equine respiratory and inflammation diseases, injuries to racehorses, colics and foals, embryonic stem cell research, and mapping the horse's genome. It is important to note that the Ag Fund contributed $313,000, okay, to the Zweig Fund in 2013 and will likely donate the same amount in 2014. Do we want to have a discussion of this? And when do we make this determination that we're going to do this in?
By minute, they receive 2% of what we take in.
Oh, so that's the 2% goes directly to them for this sole purpose? Yeah, the 2% doesn't use for anything else?
This year, you've got to figure out what the 2% would equal, and then that's what we give them, correct?
We're booking about $300,000.
Right. Okay. And how is it given to them? At the end
quarterly.
Of the fiscal year? Quarterly. Okay.
And just so you know, the Thoroughbreds also contribute.
Yeah. Okay. So at the end of the quarter, you see what revenue comes in, and 2% goes to the fund.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's the ZWAG fund committee that's put together by Horseman representatives in Cornell University that actually take the money given by both breeds and allocates it to research. Now, the researchers must apply by grant. So we probably get 15 to 17 grants a year for various types of research, as you just outlined.
Mm-hmm.
And those grants are graded in-house by Cornell for scientific accuracy and scientific method, and then presented to the board members. So the grants go through a very rigorous process prior to being approved.
Now, do we have any discretion in setting this amount, the 2% or 3%, 5%? It's or is that by statute?
It's
by statute. Okay. Oh, very good. All right. Okay. Batavia Downs proposal with Genesee County. This one I knew very little about. And Batavia Downs hosted the Livingston County Fair races in 2013. Batavia Downs management has informed the fund that it plans to enter into negotiations with Genesee County Fair managed to host races for 2014. If Batavia Downs and Genesee County come to terms, it will be a fund matter to decide the distribution of the annual property improvement distribution reimbursement, if at all. Can somebody translate that for me, what we have to do? I know we don't have to do anything
basically,
now.
Basically, we talked about this last night. Each county has they have their county fairs. In some counties, they have harness racing at the fair. Genesee County does not have that, and they want to start this. And we put a rule in, which was a few years ago, which is reinstated back in the, and we just approved the county fairs, is Batavia Downs is located off the premises of where the actual Genesee fairgrounds is. And they want to hold county fair races at the racetrack, just like we did last year. But it was just so basically they want to be able to be approved to be part of the county fair program.
I see.
It does lend to the potential. We have some real question marks liability wise racing these horses at the current facilities. When they built them, God knows how long ago some of them. New York might not have been as litigious a state as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have proper security, proper protection for the public. If something goes well, that's fine. If something goes wrong, and we came pretty close to having a real problem, I think, last year, right? But if a horse gets injured, we don't have the proper equipment at these tracks to shield the public from what might have to be done to the horse.
Mm-hmm.
Or if a driver gets injured, and even there's no outside retaining wall. In many cases, if something goes wrong on the racetrack, the horses can be in the crowd. We have a lot of exposure. And I think eventually, going back to the A's and B's in this Excelsior program, it's not impossible that we could marry some version of the fair program with the B's and combine some of the expense and everything else and our exposure and liability. Right, Charlie? I mean, we had talked about this in the past, though. I think this might be kind of a bridge. They did this. They had the fair there last year, right?
Well, they did. Caledonia didn't have it, so we moved Caledonia's to the Batavia Downs.
And it was a big success.
Yeah, oh, yeah. But this thing here, this is, like, no different than, you know, all the other counties that have it. Genesee County wants to start having...
Well, who makes the determination that this facility is fit to have a race?
This facility, Batavia.
No, any facility, just in general. I was just wondering what.
Well,
we have inspectors who are assigned to go to a county fair races, and part of the inspection is to look at the racetrack to make sure that it's it can handle a full card of races. And within his power, he could shut the program down. I didn't witness that last year. There was an accident at Westport. I think the track was in bad shape. I got different reports on when stone dust was a requirement to have a good racetrack, and I've got conflicting reports on when that was put down. I met with the board up there, and there were, I think, 10 people, and about four were generational horsemen who insisted they had done the right thing. It became a question of driver capabilities after that.
Yeah, certainly the standard for these fairs is much less than the standard at the racetracks.
Yeah.
There's no question. But there's also, you know, the agricultural component to the fair, which, again, is the fairs, in theory, are something we do to put, a good face on our racing business.
Yeah.
And it's, in theory, a grassroots kind of thing. That said, most of them, not all of them, most of the fairs that we give money to would rather take our money and not have the fairs.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a side effect. They like our money. So I really don't know the full answer there, but I do know that some of them are an accident waiting to happen. And I'm not quite sure what the solution is, but I don't think it's a bad thing. If we have a racetrack, another example, in places we have, who knows, maybe the Westchester County Fair might want to have some fair races. They used to put the fair on there. I'm not saying they do now, but I think there'd only be one possible facility to do it there. So I don't think it's a bad idea they're asking for this. Can you see a negative part of it?
Well, no, I mean, because in the rules of the county fairs, if a county wants to have a fair racing and they don't have a facility on the fairgrounds to race, we can go to another facility within the county and race the county fair races.
Are they asking for more money from this year?
No, this is the first time they're doing it. They're asking to have the application to be able to do this year. So basically, they're just going to be just another fair. They usually get $6,000 goes to the fairs.
Property reimbursement,
right?
In 2000.
And then 25% of that would go towards the racetrack, right? Isn't that part of it?
$6,000 they need to spend for improvements. Of that, 25% has to be to improve the harness racing.
I'd almost stand it on its head, and if you did it at a facility that had really good racing facility, I would then ask them to maybe take that money and spend it the other way and make them create, during those fair races, some kind of a fair-type atmosphere at the track during it, so to get something from them. And I don't know if you really need to spend the money improving the track to hold those races. They hold them every day. But maybe you put a midway on the apron or something like that to get young people at your racetrack.
So this will be during when the Genesee County Fair is on, so
they're just using us to pick up that piece of the puzzle.
Well, we're putting on a place to have, to make up for the one lost.
The lack of racing. Yeah.
And they also, Batavia Downs, why they did it last year, they like it. They're going to do it just a few days before they open their meet, so it's kind of a test run to make sure all the equipment's working, this and that. And
you said they did a great job.
They did. And the thing of it is, the Batavia Downs and the Genesee County Fairgrounds, they work together on promotion and everything all year round anyhow. So, I mean, they have booths there, this and that. What Batavia Downs would like to do is have the Genesee County Fairgrounds do a little promotion for them with some of the money that they receive, see?
I think they make a motion.
Batavia Downs usually gets the $2,000 to put it on, like every other county fair does, to pay for the cars and the starter, race secretary, and all that stuff. So they would just follow it as another fair that, the same thing that we do for all the fairs, they're just participating as the 22nd fair we got.
Somebody?
The question was about who got the $6,000. I think.
Well, that would go to the Genesee County.
But what I was wondering is, I had talked to the horsemen at Batavia previously after they did the county fair out there this year, and we talked about, because we would like to retain the county fair aspects of the racing, and since it is supposed to be a county fair, we had talked about having like a fair day, and they were saying with maybe some kind of boost for the kids, pony rides, hot dogs and hamburgers. So instead of giving that money to a track, maybe you can split it up so that some of that money could go to help have this fair event, do like a taste of New York, especially since it's going to be in the summer. and use that money to help promote it as an ag event rather than just have a county fair. If they're going to do it, it would be a good use of that money. We'd be more happy to work with them to do that.
That makes a great deal of sense. It's a good idea. I'd like to take advantage of having input from Ag and Markets. That's the only, you know, if they were here, we could, and Jackie and the commissioner are here, we could resolve that. So I think that's, what's the timing of this that we have
well,
to resolve this?
That's got to probably come up by, what, end of March?
Yes.
Why don't we approve the date and then the circumstances of it?
I mean, let's put it this way. If we can approve to let them to go ahead and
go ahead.
Plan on having
then we can work
out the details.
Very good.
You know, if we can work out the details, it doesn't have to be the same as the other tracks, but maybe,
very good.
We'll work out the money deal.
Someone want to put that in the form of a motion?
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion. We allow them to do what they propose, and we'll discuss on a later date any ideas we have to enhance the project.
Your implementation. Okay. Second. Okay. We're good. The other issue that you don't necessarily have on the agenda that, as I'm digging into things and trying to learn, I'm not necessarily the best student in the world, is the whole issue, and we touched upon it earlier, regarding the 10-year lease. And I think that, from what my sensei gave, there's very little rules and regs around it, so I think that's something that we would... I would suggest that we had staff from the fund and staff from gaming kind of work with and see what we can
simple,
come up with.
Really, it's one of those things that existed when it didn't need to exist, when everything was written.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, when those rules were written, every horse was covered by live cover.
Yeah.
Artificial insemination hadn't been created yet, so Steve's dad did it, which happened in the late 60s. It's an old law. It's outdated. Every other state in this business and the thoroughbreds have a one-year lease on this. It isn't something that promotes business. It's something that excludes business. I think as a this fund board, I think, is actually not allowed to lobby to change the law, but I think that the harness horse breeders are making a proposed bill. Is that right?
Yes. We're working with the Farm Bureau to have the statute changed. We are going to submit a bill.
Okay.
This is the current law in red are the changes that we are going to propose.
It's red.
Just waiting for
very good. Okay, good.
Do you have it?
Here. No, I don't. No.
You do now. But the reality is you'd never get a commercial horse to be here. I would say in this room, except for a Winback farm, most every commercial stallion that stands in the state of New York is represented by Dave, Steve, or myself.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd all leave the state if they had to have any kind of a restriction like that. Many of the horses are owned not completely by one entity, and they're worth millions and millions of dollars, and people don't want to be told what contents to their property if they sell it. If it becomes less fertile, if it becomes less commercial, if it becomes more commercial, if somebody shut down the slot machines, there's no advantage to being in the state of New York. These horses will come to New York and continue to come to New York so long as we have a policy on this that mirrors everybody else. The instant that that thing has teeth, every commercial stallion in the state of New York will leave. Certainly every syndicated stallion in the state of New York will leave. And it would not be, we would not be meeting our responsibility to uphold that law as it is. We have been maybe neglecting the fact it's outdated and 40 years old.
We're not contemporary at all. New York State. Yeah.
Okay. We need to get in step with this. But literally, when it came time to register the stallions next year, if this was to be enforced, am I making this up?
No, you're 100% correct, Mike. It'd be like asking somebody to sign a 10-year lease on an apartment instead of a 1-year lease.
I got you.
Ridiculous.
Okay. What kind of progress has been made in terms of discussion with the legislature? Any?
Jeff Williams is. I gave him the introduction. We've made the changes.
Okay.
He has two sponsors, and he's moving forward on it. Right now, it's Farm Bureau lobby days next week.
Okay.
He's swamped, but he's moving forward on it. We hope to have something together right after lobby days.
Very good. Okay. We're almost toward the end. We have a number of guests here. You know, like, I don't know if it's our protocol. Anybody have anything to say? Questions, comments, or, you know, like, who are these people?
I had a topic that I was hoping to address today.
Yes.
It's on the eligibility of a cold case I have for the New York Cider Stakes. So basically, everyone here is aware, most people here are aware of what's been going on for the last year with them.
Sorry, can you identify yourself?
Oh, yeah, my name is Mark Capone. I'm sorry. The name of the horse is Capozo.
One second.
Sure.
I don't know if this... I mean, trust me, I apologize for this in advance. But I know Alice is here and she's got a grievance with this. Should she be involved in the whole process of this? She's bending my ear outside about it. So.
Oh, this is related. We have it, the other part.
With the Pilsen or the tenure lease?
We're not going to adjudicate anything.
I know that she was giving me a hard time about this situation for 20 minutes when I'm sitting outside. So, if we're not going to do anything about it, we can deal with listening to her later. But I know that she does. I'm not wrong to say she has a problem with this. Is that right? I don't think I imagine the fact that you. So we can. She stepped out. We can let Mark go on and deal with.
We can listen. Yeah, we don't have the commissioner here. We've got three of us here anyway. Okay.
Well, the whole situation. I mean, some of the people here are aware of what happened, but. Last year, I purchased a horse from some people that had not paid their stud fees by January 1st date. They met on the phone, I guess, with Mike Mullaney and with Gene Brown. Subsequently, their stud fees were paid to whatever degree, if it was full or a deal, I'm not sure. Their payments to the Cider Stakes were made. And I guess I was pursuing the fact that they had to get the horses registered. In a timely fashion. I don't know if there was a date set or not with the agreement they had with Mike. So I guess they never registered the horse until June 18th or thereabouts. But I went to enter the horse last year into the Excelsior Series in Monticello. I was told that wasn't on the sheet. I wasn't eligible. Dragged on through the course of the summer. Everyone was reluctant to make a decision on it. I just felt the deal was made by Mike Mullaney once. And once he, I guess the registrations have to be in by the 1st of January, but this took place in March. And so I just felt, you know, my contention is that once he, whether the horses were registered on April 15th, I don't even know when they got the breeding certificates from Gene Brown, but whether the horse was registered, the whole contention, I guess, at this point is you didn't register the horse time enough, but the payments are received and taken, taken at that point. So it was my contention that, and why I pursued this for so long is that, number one, I bought the horse with the understanding that he was in the Excelsior Series. Number two, whether they registered, once he relieved that January 1st deadline, being that the deal was made in March, whether the horse was registered on April 15th or June 15th, I don't really see the difference. It was prior to him being eligible to enter the race. And the only real reason that I see for, you know, registrations being submitted to the breeders are to make sure that the breeders were actually paid before the horses were being made eligible to the stakes. But again, this was, that thing was, Mike made an exception to the rule, and now it seems that I just felt like they were just hoping the horse would go away and never included onto the list. And, you know, I have investors who were upset over the whole thing and felt maybe I let them down the wrong path. And I just think it's all on, you know, being, number one, I think everyone thought that the horses wouldn't show up. But number two, it's all on the technicality of whether they sent the registrations in on the 15th of April or the 15th of June. And I don't really see the difference once the January 1st deadline came about and the deal was made. It seems as though these people paid their stud fees. They paid their New York Cider State eligibility fees in good faith. And then I don't think that I'm being treated with the same good faith that those people paid the fees with. And that's my contention with it. And I've been led along for the longest time. Everyone's reluctant to make a decision upon it. And I've been waiting for this meeting to come about to voice my opinion, and I really, you know, can't continue to go on and have another year. The horse missed out on making, you know, a fair amount of money last year, and also beyond making the fair amount of money, it just gives the horse an opportunity to race. I've been a person who supported the New York Cider Stakes for at least 20 years. I was a leading trainer in the state of the New York Cider Stakes for several years during the 90s, and I just feel that, you know, the whole thing is really unfair, and it's not being treated in the right way. I feel Mr. Mullaney made a deal on this with these people, and I feel that the New York Cider Stake and the Harness Horse Breeders have backed away from the deal, and I think it's not in good faith. I really don't think it was done in the right way. And just for a small little technicality of when when these registrations need to be submitted, just doesn't make sense to me. And he made the deal with the people. You can't go back on it because I'm not sure who Alice is, whatever her problem with it is. I don't think she made a deal. They make the payment. You accept the checks for the payment to the New York Cider Stakes. You can't 6 months later back out because someone else has a problem with it. I don't think that's fair. That's not right. It's probably not even legal, to be honest with you, but such as such. But that was that's why I'm here today, and I was hoping that we could address it and get it finished with.
Okay. I am less familiar with this than anybody, you know? So if you can, might not satisfy you at the moment, but give us the opportunity to meet on this at some point in time, you know, and get some guidance from counsel and get back to you.
Okay. You know? You're on a schedule. Your end of this is you're training the source right now.
Here's one problem. If the horse isn't eligible at 2,
he's not eligible at 3.
He's not eligible at 3.
But he was eligible. Everything was made at 2. He should have been made eligible. But the horse wasn't eligible at 2. He just wasn't added to a list for whatever reason. He wasn't added to a list.
At some point in time, you need to know so you know what to do with this horse.
Right.
Exactly. What I'm saying is, if they let you know 2 years from now, it's irrelevant. There's races laid out this summer, and your next payment is in April.
15.
And you're training the horse now, and you need to know whether you're pointing him for a season of racing in New York or whether you're doing something else. So the time you get this response is important to you.
Right, that's the most important thing. Yeah. So I made a 3-hour drive here today and took my day from work just to do that.
So we need to get you a definitive answer, hopefully sooner rather than later.
All right.
Okay.
Peter, on the same token, the horse was made eligible too. He was supposed to be eligible too, and then they're saying that he's not eligible because the registrations weren't turned in.
I mean, the horse was registered April 16th. The horse wasn't even named prior to the 2-year-old payments.
Right, but that was a whole thing. The deal was done.
What's that?
Is that the other horse? There's 2 more.
That's not the other horse. He wasn't actually eligible until...
Which one are we talking about? Madame Blue or the other one?
No, not Madame Blue. Gozo. He was registered on June 16th or 18th.
Yes, he was June of 2013.
I understand that.
About 5 days before, or 1 day before the draw for the Monticello Sire Stake, correct?
I'm not sure of that. Right. No, it wasn't 1 day. No, it was being eligible.
Yeah, I think he was registered then. There was a change of ownership.
If he was registered prior to that, I think.
Okay.
The wrong date. It was about a month or two before the Sire Stakes. But the problem is that, you know, Mr. Mullaney struck up a deal with these people. Everything, they paid their stud fees in the contention that the horse was going to be eligible for the Sire Stakes. They made their payments to the Sire Stakes. The checks were accepted by the Sire Stakes office and the breeders. Now why is there a reason to back out?
Did they make their payments on time? Their payments?
No.
No.
Every payment was... First of all, I have absolute sympathy for this man. If I was guilty, it was my error in this whole thing. Yeah, with that said... Payments were slow, registrations were slow, everything. And it got to the point where I did accept the deal, then everything just dragged out, and I just had to give up the ghost. I called him up and told him, but the horse, as I understand it, was sold to Mr. Capone with the stipulation that he was Sire Stake eligible, and he stuck.
Okay.
So to be made eligible to this year's stakes, there was only one payment that was needed to be made last year. That's all.
Timely.
There wasn't more payments than made available for this year.
Right. No, what happened, what I have here and what information I've been given is he didn't make the $500 payment, the supplement payment on the 15th.
wasn't made on time. Plus the horse, and our regulations to accept the payment, the horse is supposed to be registered with the USDA.
On the 15th of what day?
I have a thing of 2/15/13, which is the February 15th payment. He sent in nominations for him, but they didn't send in the $500 payments for each horse. See, at that time, he had two horses going. Okay?
Right.
And then he finally sent in the rest of the money on March 29th, another $400 that he was short. So that's another over a month later than the supplement payment is due. Okay, so what information I received...
I think the deal that took place of the stud fees being paid and the horses being accepted into the program wasn't made until March. It wasn't made until March. That's my understanding of the whole thing.
March of 2013.
Yes.
Okay, can we do this? We're not going to resolve this here at this moment. And what we need to do is to pull together a briefing on this, the fund we need to meet on this. In that process, we need to do our due diligence and make sure the two of you sitting 3 inches from each other, and you don't have the same set of facts. You follow me? So we need to get input from, from you and everybody else, so at least we're clear on what the story is, because that seems to... You know, the result is one thing. What happens, something else. But even we're talking about, I don't know if we're talking about two different horses, two different dates, two different names. You know, that seems to be unclear at the moment. So we need to work to try to see if we can put together a clear picture and see if we can be helpful.
Should we pick a time frame
in the situation? Sooner rather than later. You mentioned the season's going to be starting soon, you know. I don't know... how much time it's going to take in terms of working with council and whatnot to come up with things, you know? I would say that why don't you at least start that process, and that by Monday by the middle of next week, see where we are in terms of the fact gathering and analysis of the situation. That'll give us a determination when we can get together to try to resolve some things. Let's see what we can do.
Your council here on this all last year and this year? Or no?
Initially, I thought we got a favorable decision by the council. Then it all of a sudden got changed about a week later. When I talked to Mike one day, he said he did speak to council about it. Everything was okay with them. And then, it was immediately following the sire stakes. When I entered the horse in Monticello. So during that course of that week, I finally got a hold of Mike. Mike said that he spoke with council, everything seemed okay. He was waiting on the director to come back from a vacation, and when he came back, then everything seemed to just
I think ultimately, like you say, Mike didn't have the privilege of having a board.
Yeah,
the board doesn't know all the facts.
I don't know the facts.
So we need to get that and then come to a conclusion.
Yeah. And if you can keep in contact with the gentleman to make sure we have everything that he has, because he may be talking about items and such that you don't necessarily, because we need to get everything together.
The gentleman you bought the horse from, he's in the wind. Nobody can find him, right?
It was father and son. They went bankrupt. All their numbers are canceled. Their addresses are all over good. To the bankruptcy lawyer that sent me the information from them. I tried to contact them through him. They've never reached my call.
But there's correspondence that we can track from Mike, from the USDA, from probably...
I think Betty has...
I think we've got enough to get it together. Yeah.
If you simplify it for me, he's got a horse that he can't race.
In our program.
That's right.
In our program.
Facing Colt. But suddenly a horse like that really becomes... He becomes almost worthless during the course of the summer when he can race an Excelsior series or whatever. You know, just gives him a place to race. And like I said, I just don't think the whole thing has gone down maybe fairly, unfairly. I'm not sure. So I'm sure there's a lot of things that I'm not aware of that did occur. So, but that was my story. And speaking with Michael last summer, just that it's dragged on for 8 months now. So.
Okay. No, and it shouldn't drag out. We should resolve this for you, one way or the other. Do you have everything from him?
Or?
No, I don't have anything.
Yeah,
ask him.
What is what you have?
From his agenda. From his agenda. Yeah, anything that's from his agenda, I got no problem with it. Anything that you responded to his attorney.
This is the two letters I sent to the that was sold. Right, that's what it was. One of which says I regret that I can't.
May last year.
Which is prior to exchanging the horse. The guy bought it from new.
What was the date of the sale? You know?
I don't know the date of the sale. I've seen the date of the. But we're going to deal with this later.
I would ask counsel what you can and cannot share with you. Okay. Anyone else? We have other guests. Did someone else have something that they wanted to comment on or no? No? Okay. Very good. Any other issues we want to put on the agenda for today? I only got one, and that's scheduling our next meeting. In theory, how often are we supposed to meet?
I think when they used to meet twice a year.
Is there anything in statute that says when we're supposed to meet? Or?
I have to meet once a year, I think.
At least once a year.
And they've been falling on that down for a while. In the past, there was a meeting here in December, and a meeting very often in Goshen during their season. Grand Circuit.
Okay.
But we need, at this time, I would say, something long before Goshen.
Oh, yeah, we're going to need to meet on budget stuff to see if we need to do a correction.
Yeah, but we also...
In early May. But then our next meeting...
we got to take care of this thing.
Should we shoot for somewhere?
I don't want to set a thing on that until we see where they are in the middle of next week. That would resolve that.
We need to, if we didn't get into, if we could do it in March.
Between, say, the 20th and 25th or something like that, you think?
Yeah, we'll have somebody work on, let's say, that week in March, we'll try to meet and coordinate a good date for everybody, and we'll try to lock it down, you know?
And then from there, maybe we can get into Goshen being our next one.
Yeah, and that, not a lot of heavy lifting gets done there.
But if we meet in...
But it gives us a chance to let it... It's still at the... Sort of the beginning of the season. So if we run into any glitches, you can take care of stuff there a little bit.
So we'll meet in March to try to address this matter and a few other things that we left off so we didn't have time to do today.
We're going to be able to take care of what was in the first... pamphlet that, or the first booklet to come that was eliminated out of here. We got all that stuff that we didn't do. You sent us last Saturday, you see this booklet with
different
agenda on it.
Rules promulgation of the board's
stuff. I don't know. I'm just saying it got shortened up or whatever. So anything we didn't cover there that we need to cover, we can take care of.
Absolutely.
I mean,
unless it was deemed not important.
I'll take a peek at that and you help
me. A lot of that was that rule stuff. That went on and on. You know, if you just looked at the size, the volume, that took up a lot of the volume. Yeah. We went through that today with the approval. We went
and
through that.
And the website will take care of it that time too, right?
We need to get shortened up the width of the book or the agenda? Uh-oh. You said it got shortened up the width of the book or the agenda?
I thought you called me the other day and said we had to change our agenda or shorten it up or something.
Oh, I just added... categorized action items.
All right, but we're assuming it's going to be a short agenda next time, but we're going to do that sooner rather than later, if we can. Okay? Are you comfortable with that? You guys tell me if I'm doing anything wrong, all right? Okay, anything else? Do I have a motion to adjourn? Second? Good, we're at it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm worried. You know, I go back to the old days. Roosevelt Raceway with, do you remember a trainer by the name of Bob Cherricks? Cherricks?
Don't think so.
That goes back. This is going back
a lot of horses are over here.
Yeah.
A lot of bridges you got to cross.
This is back in the...